Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA show!
Back in your life on this Monday, January 27, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well and very much appreciate you tuning in, as always, to the show. Of course, on today's show, we will be talking all things mixed martial arts. It was another busy weekend in the sport that we love. But I would be lying if I didn't say that I am doing today's show with profound sadness. I feel like many of you share the same sentiment that I have on this Monday afternoon. Of course, yesterday we found out the horrific news that Kobe Bryant, one of the greatest basketball players of all time, a sporting legend that I think transcends sport, a global icon, tragically passed away in a helicopter crash at the very young age of 41. Eight other people were on the helicopter with him, including his 13-year-old daughter, Gianna. And just first hearing about his passing and then finding out that his 13-year-old daughter, who he appeared very clearly to love dearly and have a very special bond with, was just an absolute gut punch. I mean, I felt physical pain finding out about this news. And I found out while I was putting my daughter to sleep, or at least attempting to get her to nap. And then we quickly forgot about that mission as I was just completely immersed in trying to figure out if this was real, hoping that it was just a hoax, fake news, whatever you want to call it. And then, of course, finding out that it was, in fact, real. Just absolutely gut-wrenching. And I know Kobe Bryant isn't an MMA fighter, and I promise you we'll talk about MMA, but I just feel such pain for his family, for his wife, Vanessa. They have three other beautiful daughters, and for everyone involved and affected by this tragedy. The other names of the people who were on that helicopter: John Altobelli, Carrie Altobelli, Alyssa Altobelli, Christina Mauser, Sarah Chester, Peyton Chester, and Ara Zobayan. And I know people die every day, and I know there's tragedies every day, and I know we don't spend time talking about those tragedies, but I can't deny the fact that this is a man that was very influential, especially when I was growing up. Seemed like a superhero, seemed larger than life. I remember when he tore his Achilles and he still walked on to the court and hit those two free throws and walked off the court by himself. And if you know how much pain is going through one's body when that happens, I mean, that's just unfathomable. But that's who Kobe Bryant was, one of the greatest athletes of my generation. And, you know, when I was in my most impressionable age as a youngster, 14, 15 years old, playing basketball. I've said it many times. Basketball, my favorite sport growing up. I wanted to be an NBA star when I was 10 years old, and then quickly changed my goals to being a basketball broadcaster. I loved the game of basketball, and I remember when he was drafted by the Hornets and then quickly traded to the Lakers. And I remember how cool he was when he came into the league, this 18-year-old kid who thought he was going to be better than Michael Jordan. Just seemed so darn cool. And seemed like he was destined for great things. And I remember a Slam magazine that came out in 1998. I brought that magazine to my barber because I loved his mini afro that he had. And I started to grow out my hair so that it would look like Kobe Bryant. I always had short hair, but I wanted to look like Kobe Bryant. I wanted to be as cool as Kobe Bryant. I brought him the magazine. I said, give me the Kobe Bryant haircut. And that's the haircut before a basketball tournament. I was a part of the 1998 Montreal team for the Maccabi Games. And I asked him to shape my hair like Kobe. I don't know if we actually nailed it, but there's my credential from those games in 1998 in Detroit. There's my Kobe Bryant haircut, because everyone tried to emulate him. Everyone wanted to be like him. His all-star debut in New York was just unbelievable. And this was a guy who, of course, you know, was not flawed. Of course, we know about what happened in 2003, the sexual assault allegation that, you know, the charges were later dropped, but then, he he settled out of court and, of course, apologized. And that will always be a part of his story. This is a guy who was not an angel, but it did seem like later in life was truly destined to do much greater things than he ever did on the court. And for me, especially as a father, to see the connection and the bond that he had with his daughter, that footage of him at the Nets game with his daughter recently, I watched that 10 times last night over and over again, maybe even more, and watched it when it first came out a couple months ago. I mean, that's what you dream of as a father, to have that connection with your kids and to hear about why he used to take the helicopter so that he wouldn't miss plays and he wouldn't miss practices, and to learn about the things that he was doing with his gym, the Mamba Academy, and just to hear the stories about, you know, just what kind of a great daddy he is. There's the moment right there that I'm talking about. If you don't know, that's a dad with his daughter. It's just heartbreaking. It's just absolutely heartbreaking to see this news, and I can't get over it. I can't stop thinking about it. I can't stop thinking about his wife. I can't stop thinking about his parents. I can't stop thinking about his other kids. I can't stop thinking about the other people, the final moments on that helicopter. I just can't stop thinking about all of it. And I'm sorry I'm getting emotional, but it's just a horrific thing, especially as a father. So it's just a horrible day in our lives, and I think we'll all remember where we were when we found out that news. Perhaps this is our Roberto Clemente or our John Lennon or our Thurman Munson. I don't know, but it's just a horrible day, and I don't know if the sport of basketball will ever be the same. And it just seemed like he was just an amazing guy. So today we will talk MMA, and Michael Chiesa will join us, and AJ Agazarm will join us, Jessica Penne, Sean O'Malley, Owen Roddy, Macy Barber, Chris Cyborg, Curtis Blades, Tyron Woodley. They will all join us, and we will all talk about their great careers and things going on in their lives. But there was one guest that I wanted to have first, because I thought of this individual when the news came out, because I remember when he first met him, he called me and sounded like a 10-year-old boy who had just met his idol. And I'm talking about Daniel Cormier, who is the voice of Detail, which is Kobe Bryant's brainchild on ESPN+. What an honor that is to be able to represent his company and his vision for our sport. And so there was only one proper way to start this show, and it was with Daniel Cormier. And DC is kind enough to join us on the phone right now. So I want to say hello to DC off the bat and welcome him to the program. DC, how are you?
What's up, Barry? How you doing, man?
Ah, man, it's a tough day, and I've never even met Kobe. I was at the one press conference when they announced the body armor deal, and I was in his presence, and that was a thrill. But I know you knew him, and I know how much you admired him. And so I just want to ask you, how are you feeling on this Monday after yesterday's tragedy?
You know, it's just sad, man. It's really sad because you don't expect to ever see anything like that. And for all the people that perish in the helicopter accident, it's just terrible, you know, because you constantly think about the fact that they're just going to do something positive, you know, passing on, you know, the game that's given him so much, you know, and taking all these families along for the ride, you know. I think about the other people, and I don't know their relationship to Kobe, but he probably thought that he was going to make their lives easier, you know, instead of sitting in traffic for hours and we can just travel to the game together. And, you know, and then ultimately, like, everybody's gone. It's just a really sad thing. And I can't really shake the idea or the vision in my head of, like, those final moments, you know, that it just really, it really tears me apart to think of those last few moments, you know, whenever. Because you got kids, when you have kids, I've had things happen to me where I'm with little Daniel or Marquita, and the car like shifts or anything, and they're like, "Dad, what happened? Dad, what's going on?" You know, and you know that's exactly what he was going through when that was happening. You know, him and little girl probably looked to him and said, "Dad, what's going on?" And he probably tried to assure her that everything was going to be okay when it wasn't going to be, you know. It's a really, really bad thing to think about. And that's all I've been thinking about for the last, you know, 24 hours. It's like, as parents, we sometimes have to be brave in the face of things that we know we can't overcome. And I'm sure that's exactly what KD was doing when that was happening, you know?
Do you remember the first time you met him, the first time you spoke to him?
So I met Kobe the first time I ever met Kobe was way back in 2004 at the Olympic Games, and he was just so accessible, you know, like he would be at the Olympic Village and take anybody's picture, and he didn't really like cordon himself off from everybody. He would, you know, obviously it gets overwhelming when you have a profile like he did, but he was still there, you know, and he was always kind of like a nice guy. He was always a nice guy, but there was a difference to me meeting Kobe as a wrestler and the day I went in there as you know, a guy that he had heard do a tryout for his show and that he was going to meet. But it wasn't a difference in me, right, for all that I accomplished. It was a difference in him. Right? Like, for as nice as he was in Athens, you could just tell that he was so driven. He was just so driven. And when I walk into that office, he's smiling so much and cracking jokes and just so nice. And I couldn't even believe it. Like, I couldn't believe that this was the guy that we had seen for so long as just this fierce competitor, like, would not accept anything less than being the best. And he was just like, he just seemed like a different person. He was just completely at ease and in his office. And I don't know. I was so happy to have really started to make a relationship with someone like that. It was crazy.
Yeah, I'll never forget you calling me right after, and you're like, guess who I just met with? Guess who I was just in his office? And you were like, to hear you, as accomplished as you are, the legend that you are in our sport, honestly sound like a 10-year-old kid meeting his idol. It was amazing. It was great to hear you in that kind of state. You really seemed, you know, overjoyed by the fact that not only you got to meet with him and it seemed like he was inspiring you, but also that you were going to be working with him. And so I will never forget that. For as long as I live, I remember who was in the car with you. It was just a great moment.
You know, I was when I went, I didn't truly know what to expect, right? You think you're going to walk in and see a guy that's larger than life, and you don't know if he's going to stand above you or if he, you know, you don't know. Because for everything that I accomplished, you know, I've always looked up to, you know, all that he'd done. And he just was put himself right on your level, you know, and talked about how it was going to be me, him, and Peyton. And I was going to be mentioned in such glorified air. It was just insane to me to be talking to Kobe Bryant. Like, and then it just got better because we exchanged contact info, and then I'm like, what is going, you know, like, this can't even be real. And then to have a guy like Kobe who you're working with, but also he's your boss, like, this is his company, and if things are going well, you get a random text saying how things are going well, and your show is killing it. It was different.
And I know that you're very proud to be the face of this show. I would imagine now, as you mentioned last night on social media, that now takes a whole other, you know, a whole other meaning for you right now. Like, now you want to do this for him, correct?
Yeah. Absolutely, Ariel. And I want to study harder and you know, be more quiet and just be more, like, really in the moment. You know, I love doing the show, and I've done it to the best of my ability. But I know that every time he did that show, or every time he did anything, he tried to do it better than he did it before. I want to take that approach now. I want to study more. He was such a giant in terms of mental preparation that I want to make sure that I'm doing the same thing and representing this show and doing the show that he created from the ground up justice. I mean, you know, this is something that I've never really told people, but When I met Kobe and we started talking about the show, and I said, well, maybe I'll do them around the time guys will fight. You know, maybe I'll talk to the UFC about who they're picking. He goes, don't do that. It's your show. I said, about maybe ESPN. He said, don't do that. It's your show. I said, well, we got to pick people that the fans like, right? He's like, no, it's not for the fans. He was adamant about the show not truly being meant for fans. Granted, they watch it, and if they can appreciate it, good. But Detail was never made for ESPN or the fans or the UFC to choose and build fights with. Detail was made for that guy, and this was his words. He said, this show's made for the guy. That's why you stand on top of the octagon with those two belts. And thought to himself, I want to do that. Or the kid that saw you become the champion and said, I want to do what Daniel Cormier did. He said, so don't cheat that guy. Give him the tools. Try to help him understand the work and the little things that he's going to have to do in order to accomplish that. Or girl, you know, because he was a big advocate for female sports. He said, give them, this is a chance for you to give them those things, those tools. Show them the little detail that they can take into their career that will hopefully one day give them a chance. That's who the show's for, not for anybody else. And that's always stuck with me. You know, I was doing a show, and I would think, like, how is this going to be received? And, you know, he always assured me it was never going to be that. And as I'm in the studio doing it, you know, I'd see KB outside of the door watching. And as I'd come out and listen in, he was so hands-on, he would listen in. And when I walked out after doing the Amanda Nunes show, he told me, well, this is going to be the most popular detail on ESPN, the UFC. He goes, because you're good at it and the sport is just booming. And I'll never forget those words, man.
Man, it's tough. And his relationship with his daughter, especially from an athletic standpoint, reminds me a lot of your relationship with your son, Dan Jr., and being there and trying to, you know, be at every practice and be so involved. And so I'm sure that you see a little bit of yourself in that too. I was struggling. I didn't know if I should tell my son, who's around the same age as your son as well. I didn't know how to explain this. I don't want to shield them from real life things. But did you, and your son, I think, is a little more in tune with sports than mine is. Did you tell him what happened?
I did. You know, me and my wife were down, and we ran out to the room from the kid. My wife was crying, just so much because of the stories I told about Kobe. You know, she hadn't met him yet, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend him and I were best friends. You know,
right.
It was just random times, you know, but I would tell her stories about when I was in there talking to him or if, you know, I got something saying the show was doing good or, even, you know, they can see it, you know, like we got a Christmas gift with a note signed by KB, you know, like obviously maybe it's something that goes out probably to the entire staff that works there. But it looked like he took time to sign every one. And it's like, those things mean something. You know, you don't know how people take things. My wife saw that and she saw the act. And, so we're in the other room. I'm not saying anything. And little Daniel walks in like 5 o'clock at night and it's on the TV and he goes, wait, Kobe Bryant died? And I said, yeah. And I told him and explained it. And he was like, wow. And just, you know, he's like, wow. You know, and that just tells you that it's like he transcended generations, right? Because people older than me love Kobe Bryant. People my age, which was Kobe's age, love Kobe Bryant. Now my children know who Kobe Bryant is. You know, Daniel's 8 years old, and he knew who Kobe Bryant was. Yeah, you know, and it's just, it was tough. And again, like you said, it's very scary because I try to go to everything. I'll jump on a plane early in the morning to get back to a wrestling tournament. We're always together, and that's what makes it so scary. And it's sad because you got to think he's done that thousands of times, him and Gianna, you know, like going to games and going to practice, and you just never know, you know, you just never know.
I could sit here and ask you about him, reminisce. I know you're a big basketball fan as well, all the memories, but I know we have limited time with you, so of course, I want to ask you about yourself and the state of your career. You told us last time we spoke around 4 months ago, you want one more fight and that's it. But it seems like Stipe is still on the sidelines and his return indefinite. Where are you at right now? How long do you plan on waiting for him? And if he is not ready to return, are you going to fight someone else, or is that it?
No, you know, I right now, I'm getting back to work. I have a procedure this week because Stipe's not the only guy that's banged up. You know, he's hurt. You know, like I had a bad back surgery last December, and obviously there's still little lingering things in regards to that. I'm going back to do something else this week, get some treatment done. I about went to Panama on Joe Rogan's. You know, Joe Rogan told me about this great stem cell treatment they have down there that could potentially help me get through a fight camp. And obviously, I looked into that, but we'll see what happens. But I don't really feel like fighting anyone else. I mean, or where I fight, it's going to be for the championship, or I'm not going to fight. You know, so at this point, Steve Miocic has the ability to retire me. And I gave him a rematch. I was very forward in everything I did. I wasn't ready to fight Derek Lewis. I wasn't. But UFC needed someone. I was, I'm the guy that's always stepped up. You know, they gave me a fight that I thought I could compete in, and I took it. That's why I fought him instead of Stipe in November. But it's just so crazy to me how he was so quick to step up on 3 weeks' notice back then because he didn't have the belt. But the moment he gets the belt, he just changes. I don't understand how people don't see this or what it truly is. It's kind of insane, but it is what it is. I'm happy, man. You know, with everything that's going on, you can't linger in things that are sad. You want to run away from the fight, then let him run away from the fight. He wants to man up and fight me, he'll man up and fight me. He fought. Me and that guy fought five rounds almost, and I've won almost four of them. Won about 3 3/4 of 5 rounds. So I can imagine why he wouldn't want to fight again.
When you read some of his comments, manager's comments, are these things starting to rub you a little bit the wrong way? Are you starting to feel like, you know, it's not 100% on the up and up, and that they're kind of making you wait as they believe you made them wait?
You know, I had back surgery. I couldn't have done it any sooner. I probably shouldn't have even done it. Like, honestly, now that I think about it, I probably shouldn't have even fought in August. I mean, I was able to wrestle for 2.5 weeks before the fight. I couldn't start kicking until less than a month before the fight. Like, I was just boxing. I was boxing and clinching for 6 weeks before the fight. Like, I didn't want to keep the guy waiting. I didn't want to not fight. Like, I like to compete. It's what I've done my whole life. So, they think they're playing a game with me and whatever. You know, it's not even upsetting. It's just kind of like, it's almost like it just kind of breaks you down. Like, but I have faith in the UFC. I have faith in Dana White. I have faith in all the things that him and I have spoken about in regards to this fight. And if he doesn't get right, then, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see if maybe I get an opportunity for an interim championship, or maybe he gets stripped of the title. I mean, I remember this is a guy that's won one fight in 2 years, you know, between UFC 226 and before he even fight in July. You know, over the course of those 2 years, he will have fought twice. He will have fought twice. So it's not like he's the most active guy.
And so just to be clear, if they did strip him or if they institute an interim belt, is that good enough for you, or does it have to be attached to Stipe for this to all count?
I would like it to be attached to Stipe, but if they tell me it's something different, then if justice is served, you know, if justice is served, you know, like if he, most times the guy's away for that long, usually something does happen, you know, so. Somebody told me last weekend, they said, well, you made him wait a year. I said, yeah, but I fought in that year. You know, like I didn't sit a whole year. So we'll see what happens. You know, everybody talks about poking him in his face. Like, you know, if I ever did that, like it was 100% accidental. I never intend to stick a guy in his eye with my fingers. If my thumb went in his face and I'm making a fist and my thumb hit him in the face, and my thumb hit him in the face, it's not my thumbnail. It's my thumb. Move your head. clothes. I mean, I'm not trying to poke this guy in his face. I've always been respectful of Stipe Miocic, and always been, I've always admired him for being honorable. And the honorable thing to do would be to fight again and just put him into this trilogy.
And do you have a deadline? Like, if this doesn't materialize by the summer or the fall, because I know you want to kind of move on with your life as well.
I'd like to be in the summer. Look, man, I'm doing pretty good outside of the Octagon. You know, I've got my detail show, got my UFC commentating career. I've got my businesses, my wrestling programs, and my barbershops and my restaurants. I've got some other TV things in the works, you know, and I've started to do public speaking, and I've been getting a ton of engagements in that sense, talking about my story and how I've overcome and become who I am today. I've got a lot of things that can really sustain me for the rest of my life on top of all the stuff that I've made in my career. But this one's not about money. This is about him and I finishing what we got started. That's really all it is. But also because I just know I can beat him. You know, I know I can beat him. He did a really good job of landing those shots to the body the first time or the second time, but that won't be available anymore. I've been working tirelessly to try to fix that. And I think I can beat him. And if I don't, if he manages to win again, okay, whatever. But I just know that I feel like we have unfinished business.
So if it doesn't happen by the summertime, you would consider then just stopping?
Yeah, because you can't wait forever. You know, every day that passes does not benefit me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a realist. I understand that. So either we're going to do it or we're not going to do it, or, you know, we're going to fight, or this dude's going to put it into, you know, me as a fighter. So I just don't understand why it's so difficult for our situation to truly be what it is. Like, I didn't just make the guy wait. I had back surgery. I had back surgery and fought him 9 months after. Khabib had back surgery a few years ago and told me he didn't even start feeling like himself till after a year. So, if anything, I rushed back to the Octagon.
And last thing for you, DC, I'm just curious because I was wondering about it in the moment. Is it weird for you when you're interviewing Blades after his big win? He's talking about title shot and you're kind of just standing there with the same aspirations. Like, what's going through you? You do a great job of compartmentalizing and putting the analyst hat on, but I couldn't help but wonder what was actually going through your mind in that moment.
That the kid actually deserved that, and in a different time, he'd probably be right on the cusp of it. You know, I harbor no ill feelings towards Curtis Blades. I thought he fought a great fight. I think that his career is heading in the right direction, and as the only guy in the top 12 under 30, he's got a really bright future ahead of him, but I can't help but think in a different time he'd be right on the verge, and honestly, just feeling happy for him. You know, people deserve their moments, and Curtis Blades got a moment last night, you know, or Saturday night. And he did something that very few people have been able to do, and that's beat Junior in that striking room. So, yeah, man, I don't feel ill towards Curtis. You know, I think Curtis, he won three fights in a row now. And, yeah, in a different time, he'd probably be fighting for a championship. Unfortunately, I think that the UFC knows that Stipe and I should be fighting. And ultimately, they're going to make the decision for whatever they say. I just think that Stipe and you know, those guys are a little misguided. You want to fight Tyson Fury, 6'10", in a boxer. I'm 5'10", in a wrestler. And I was able to outstrike him for the vast majority of the fight. What's going to happen? You know? I'm going to be like Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. These guys, like, these guys can't build a fight like those two. Those two are the greatest fight builders in the history of combat sports. So, of course, it was going to be massive. It wouldn't be like that.
DC, we will let you go. Thank you very much for coming on and for sharing your thoughts about Kobe. If you want to watch detail, you can do so now on ESPN Plus. It's a great show. I know you just taped an episode about Conor McGregor, which I believe is out a week from today. So I'm looking forward to that, and I've enjoyed every episode up until now. I know this wasn't easy, but I really appreciate it, my man. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Ari.
All right. There he is. Daniel Cormier, the former UFC light heavyweight and heavyweight champion. He is the voice of Detail. You don't actually see him, on the show, but, very much the brainchild, as he put it, of, Kobe Bryant. There's a basketball version. There's a football version with Peyton Manning and an MMA version, which is a huge honor, for Daniel and for the sport. And, if you're a fan of the X's and O's, so to speak, the real technical side of MMA, coming from a mind like his, it's a real fun listen. Watch as well, but you just hear him breaking it down. It's very intimate. So, if you're able to watch it, if you have access to ESPN Plus, I suggest checking it out. So appreciate him, stopping by, appreciate his thoughts. I know it wasn't easy. I spoke to him yesterday about it, and, he wasn't, feeling too great, but, very much appreciate Daniel Cormier's time on this Monday afternoon. All right, now let's move along to our next guest. He is the one and only Tyron Woodley, who returns to action on March 21st, main event of UFC London against Leon Edwards, a very important, a very big fight at 170 pounds. And he is kind enough to be joining us all the way from Phuket, Thailand. It's very late over there. We really appreciate him staying up to talk to us. Tyron, how are you?
I'm doing great. I've got a nice picture of me as well, so that makes me in a better mood.
Of course. I mean, I don't think you ever take a bad picture, if I'm being honest.
Appreciate that.
Want to talk to you about Thailand and what you're doing there, and obviously this upcoming fight, and it's going to be a big year for you. But I saw you mentioning the tragic passing of Kobe Bryant on social media, and I know as a father, you relate, and as an athlete, and I'm just wondering, you know, what he meant to you and how you are dealing with this. I'm still in shock, if I'm being honest. We just spoke to DC about him as well. How are you feeling about this news?
You know, to be honest, when you think about Kobe Bryant, a lot of people think about him just as an athlete and what he did and his legacy. But I think about, you know, his the way he dealt with adversity. You know, everyone in Los Angeles didn't always have the kindest words to say about Kobe Bryant, but he took it with stride. He always went out there and he executed. He did what he had to do. And he cemented his legacy professionally. When you look at his involvement with his daughter and as a coach and, you know, just a businessman, when he came and spoke to us at the UFC Fighter Summit, you know, he just was very sharp, very intellectual. And he seemed like he had his head right on his shoulders and just talking about the body armor and all these other investments. And, you know, it was someone that if you got an opportunity to sit next to, it would probably be nearly impossible for you not to leave with some new inside knowledge. So just hearing the tragic, I was here at Phuket, and obviously the time zone is quite a bit different. So my phone started to blow up around 3 a.m. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? Everybody sent me a message. And even to the point right now, it doesn't really seem real. But the thing that really sticks out to me, obviously the other people on the plane, the pilot, the other passengers that lost their lives due to this tragic crash, but I just started thinking about, as a father, your job is to protect, to provide, and to basically be there for your kid. And only thing I can just run through my mind is, what do you do in a moment where you see a plane, you know what's going down, and your daughter's there, and she's probably, you know, yelling and screaming and crying, and you can't do anything to save her? And that stuff just really shook me up. It was a really big wake-up call for me. And life is not promised. Life is short. And we got to be a little bit more mindful of what we do with our time on Earth.
When he went to talk to you guys in 2017 at the Fighter Retreat, did you have a chance to speak to him? Have you ever actually had a conversation with him?
Yeah, I spoke to him for a second. Yeah, I spoke to him very briefly. It wasn't a very long, drawn-out conversation, but it was just, he was really sharp, and I just wanted to ask him a couple questions about business. You know me, I'm always trying to do something different than the norm. But just a lot of people, when he was investing and learning different languages and soccer, and they just didn't know a lot about him. I really didn't even know his involvement with body armor until the actual summit. So just where his mom is at, this was like a company that wasn't even really on the board yet. And I'm not trying to promote a company either. I'm not even represented by them. But it was just that he saw things futuristically, whether it was his career and how he would end. No, just very, very sharp.
I appreciate the insight, and it's hard to move on to other things, but I do want to talk about you and where you're at. You're in Thailand right now. When did you get there, and why did you decide that this was the right thing for you right now to go over there and do at least part of your camp there?
Well, I was working and doing the ESPN desk. I was doing the ESPN desk in Singapore, and then, you know, I've been talking a ways ago to Mike, probably like 2013, about coming out here and training, and, you know, I just really never had the time, and then I just made the time. I said, all right, well, UFC, can you guys please just change my flight? I want to go spend 2 or 3 days in Thailand. It was more like just go see Thailand. It wasn't so much about the training. But if anybody knows Mike Swick, for a very long time, was like the number one contender, and he was supposed to get title shots, and he took a couple fights just because that was his mentality, and it basically forfeited his opportunity because he lost a couple fights that would have put him in title contention. Not only at 185, but also at 170. But the thing I remember about Mike Swick is when I was training at AK as a young whippersnapper, you know, DC hadn't even really started yet. It was Luke Rockhold, who was like a rising star in Strikeforce. But it was him. It was Koscheck. It was Jake Shield. It was John Fitch. It was a lot of guys. I mean, they may have had five of the top seven welterweights at that time. But his work ethic, his cardio, and his conditioning was above everyone. I've never seen him. And him and Cain Velasquez, because Cain's a heavyweight, they really just amazed me. And when I started thinking about getting back to my roots and I started thinking about getting back to the grind, anywhere I go, training-wise, I always try to take a piece. So a lot of the conditioning and the things that I learned at AK, things I brought back home. So I wanted to get myself away from everything, away from the distractions, away from the bullshit, away from the toxic. You know, situations and just everything that basically did not allow me to be physically or mentally present. I was physically present in my last fight, but if anybody knows Tyron Woodley, they know that was a non-characteristic fight. So when I came out here, one in Milwaukee at this time, it was like negative 50 wind chill. You know, I was on antibiotics. I was sick. You know, I did Wildin' Out, I did Family Feud, I did Hawaii 5-0, I dropped my whole album, you know, I had some personal stuff going on in my life, and none to make excuses, but I'm always built to have a lot on my plate. I'll never let someone tell me to limit myself. I'll never let someone to tell me, you know, to sit on gifts that God gave me and just do this one thing. That's not how I'm built. I don't even know if I can function that way. When I came out here, I haven't had a cellular phone call with anybody in maybe 2 weeks. So I'm in the jungle, like not like, oh, I'm in the trenches. No, I'm dead ass in the jungle. Outside of my window is monkeys, snakes, and the damn cat. They just keep begging all damn night. So I'm literally in the jungle. I'm secluded away from everything. I'm in different time zones. People can't really bug me and ask me for money or whatever the hell they might do. So it was just something that I needed. And then I came out here and my cardio, I lost 15 pounds since I've been out here already. My cardio is insane. I've been training my ass off, and I just really felt good about it. So I asked Mike if he would be okay with me coming back. So I'm going to go home for a couple of weeks, hug up my kids, especially after that tragic Kobe Bryant deal. And then I'm going to hop back on a bird, and I'm going to come back out here. I'm going to do something different. I always see my kids before I go out to my fight, but I'm going to come back out here, and I'm going to go straight to my Thailand.
Oh, wow. So does that mean that you're going to have a different corner for this fight?
No, I should have the same corner. I may not have my coaches for as many weeks, but the techniques and the lessons and how to break down film and the communication, thank God for FaceTime, thank God for text messages and videos. We can do a lot of this stuff virtual, but I may not have Dean for a full 8 weeks like I have to do. So I want to...
Now we have lost Tyron there in the jungle, as he said, joining us from Thailand. We'll reconnect with him in a second over here. Very important fight, obviously, coming up for him on March 21st in London. Important fight for him, an important fight for Leon Edwards. Edwards trying to cement his spot as the number one contender at 170 pounds, and there's no better way to do that than against the guy who held the belt for so long, and Tyron trying to right the wrong, so to speak, of last March, that fight against Kamaru Usman. Welterweight, probably right now, arguably the most interesting division because of the inclusion of Conor McGregor and the Jorge Masvidal rise, and of course Usman,
three, four, five, six, seven,
and Tyron Woodley coming back. Leon Edwards, Tyron, you're back.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm sorry about that.
No
yeah.
problem. So in total, how many weeks will you be there?
I told Mike I was going to start doing a pre-camp here, where I come out here 2 weeks before the 8 weeks. So I've been out here. It'll be 2 weeks before the 8 weeks when I leave. And then I'm going to go over 2 weeks. So I'm guessing it's almost 6 weeks more. So it's going to be a total of 8 weeks.
Okay. And I remember the last time that we spoke to you, you weren't dismissive of it, but you didn't seem incredibly keen on the idea of fighting Leon Edwards next. In the end, why did you decide to take this fight?
He's going to get fucked up. He's going to be the next one. Unfortunately for him, he must not do his research like I do. The fighters that have talked the crap, that have, you know, what they thought they should do from an entertainment standpoint. Like a few beats ago, he was like, oh, Tyron's a great champion. Actually, the fight that we're watching right now, RDA, he had the perfect opportunity to actually fight me. You know why? Because I was the one calling that fight. I called that fight. Not called that fight. I was on the desk with the fight. And we had him up for interviews, and he didn't actually fight me. He's, you know, oh, if you would please come out to London. And he was so graceful and so pleasant. Now, all of a sudden, he's, you know, taking on the lead of everybody else. And this fucking division is getting so corny, and it's starting to irk me so bad. And I just really need to come back and just try to fuck everybody up. I'm so annoyed with everyone. And when I get to that point, it's a very, very dangerous point. When I was fighting Darren Till, everybody's talking about how young he was and how old I was and how focused he was and how I was doing all this other stuff outside the octagon. You know, he don't even care about his kids in Brazil. And, you know, he's the next Conor McGregor, and he had this many people come on, da, da, da. And I said, all right, cool. We'll see. And what happened is he got his ass bad. It was probably my best performance of my entire career. And I feel more, I take this more personal than I do Darren Till. So if that gives you any indication of how I feel, my conditioning is insane right now. Everybody's like, man, dude, I don't know how the fuck you got it. I came out here, I was sick, I was on antibiotics, you know, and in over like 2 week period, I legitimately just came to a crazy state and something just clicked. And I'm doing the old shit, the stuff that's not cute. That's saying, everybody want to hit mitts and shadow boxing spark. Nobody want to be on this air down bike doing sprints. Nobody want to be running 3, 4, 5 miles. Nobody want to be sprinting up hills with tires on your back. Nobody want to be doing the things that suck. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm doing the stuff that suck so that I can go out there and I can shine. I don't have to guess. I don't have to hesitate. I don't have to hold anything back. I can just run through the small park.
Do you find yourself still thinking about the Usman fight? Like, do you still lament it and harp on it, or do you feel like, or maybe you need to get through this fight to get over that one, or are you officially over that night?
I'm officially over that night. It took a while, but yeah, I'm officially over.
Okay. And now with this opportunity, have you been told, all right, you beat Edwards, you're next, you're getting that title shot? Have they given you any kind of indication?
Damn, I look fucked up in that picture. They have not. And like I said before, my goal, right, like, you got to recognize who makes the most money in our sport, not the world champion.
Right.
The people that make the most money are guys like, bless his soul, like freaking Masvidal finally making his paydays. He's at the top of the list now. So was the Diaz brothers. So was Conor McGregor. Some of these people have never had a belt. Cowboy Cerrone just earned a big payday. Never been remotely close to a world title in the UFC. When you look at guys like Demetrius Johnson, who was pound for pound, and he was making less money than Joanna and Jacek. And you think about people that really, 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 this sport is about being the best of the best in the world title belt before they started incorporating new belts and doing different things. You were supposed to be the top dog. And in no other sport are you going to see Stephen Curry making less than somebody because they talking crap and they want to fly a suit to the presser. No, he's going to make the most because he's draining threes in your face. So when you, I probably should have used a Raptor, especially after they won the NBA, the NBA finals. I know Ariel's
all good.
Could have used,
I get the analogy.
Could have used, you get the analogy, but right now my goal is just really, really to just focus on winning and just proving it to the people that support me and the people that believe me and myself. I'm capable of so much more. And the good thing about me is I haven't even peaked yet. I have not peaked as a professional yet. And you looking, I'm looking back at some of these fights that you guys are clicking through. A Leon Edwards, a Kamaru Usman, a Colby Covington, none of those guys are going to make me that much more of a great than a Carlos Condit, than a Robbie Lawler, than a Josh Koscheck, than a Dong Hyuk Kim. The people that are going to put my name in the record books are the people I've already defeated. This shit's just personal now.
Hmm. And so, all right, so we're in this position now where welterweight is wide open. Do you have a take on who Usman should fight next, or how this whole thing should play out?
I mean, if we look at certain, if we look at other people's hands, we peek over the poker table and we look at different sets of hands, it would be no case where Joanna Jędrzejczyk didn't get an instant rematch, or Ronda Rousey or Cody Garbrandt, or you see Holly Holmes on their way back in a title fight so many times afterwards. We've seen these things happen like that. Like, I'm not even guaranteed a title shot after beating Leon Edwards.
Right.
So how does my deck of cards look a little bit different when I'm the one that actually defended four times and won four world title fights in a year? Not, okay, you look so awesome. Kobe's so tough because he got his jaw broke and he kept going. No, I tore my labrum in a world title fight. And I went on to defend 20-plus shots. I busted my foot against Kelvin Gastelum, and I went on to win that fight. And these all happened in the first round. I busted my hand against Darren Till. I said, fuck it. I've only landed two elbows in my entire MMA career, but how many elbows did I land in that fight? Because I didn't throw my right hand. So these are situations where, you know, I don't get the credit for enduring and winning. Some people endure and lose, and we give so much credit for losing. Our sport's hilarious. No other sport does that. You know, oh my God, you know, this team lost in the AFC championship. Man, did they were so tough. No, you fucking lost. We're talking about who won the Super Bowl. We're not talking about how tough you was because you endured a basketball game that went in double overtime. We're talking about the person that put up their last shot to take them on to the final. But in our sport, we pick and choose when we want to buy that.
And I'm sure there's a part of you that laughed a little bit when you heard, you know, the UFC brass saying Holloway gets an immediate rematch. Where was my immediate rematch, right? You were the first person I thought of when that narrative came out afterwards, when he lost to Volkanovski. Oh, yeah, immediate rematch. You had just as long, if not a little bit longer of a title reign than Max Holloway.
You know, you got to know your deck of cards. And I can cry with spilled milk, and I can, oh, boo-hoo, boo-hoo, I can do that. Or I can just say, hey, these are my deck of cards. I'm going to play the shit out of this hand, and I know what I got to do. I got to go out here, and I just got to focus on victory. Dan Lambert told me this a long time ago. He said, Tyron, just win. Focus on winning, and everything else will fall into place. So right now my focus is going out and beat my next opponent, barely even deserving of me to say his name. But I'm just going to go out there, and I'm just going to whoop his ass. And sometimes people – one of my sayings is they think they want some, but they don't really want to. He will very, very quickly find out that he got locked in a cage with the wrong motherfucker.
And by the way, I love this idea of the guy who is at the top of the mountain, the champion now, going to the bare bones living situation that you're in Thailand. Could you, like, what is in back of you? Like, how small is this place that you're living in right now?
No, this is my fridge.
Wow.
This is my, hello.
Oh,
this
wow.
is my recording studio.
Sweet.
I got a nice little. The bed's right in the middle of the fucking room. It's weird. But yeah, you know, I'm right here, and it's not just Thailand. You know, I'm going back to the basics in general and living a more simple life. Like, I blew through a lot of fucking money, man. A lot of money, and I was, you know, jewelry and fucking VIP and all these experiences, all those things that came with the. With the championship life, you really, when you come from where I come from, you never imagine making that type of money. You never imagine being in that type of position. You work hard for it, and I didn't get there by accident. You know, I busted my ass, but nobody taught me finance. Everybody taught me 1 + 1 = 2. That's math. That ain't finance. That ain't wealth. That ain't investing. That ain't saving. That ain't tax. That's basically you made money and fuck it, you spend it. Because when I was growing up, we spent it when it came in. My mom's check was already cut up. It was done before she got it. We had to pick which utility bills was not going to be on that month. And it was something that I didn't recognize as a kid that wasn't normal. I thought everybody had to do that. So when you start making money, I bought like 7 cars and fucking 2 houses and all these trips, and nobody ever lifted a fucking hand when we was at a restaurant, 10, 15 people to eat dinner. And, you know, I was going fucking to VIP clubs and all this shit like every other week. And I just imagine making that amount of money for a very long time. And they very quickly said, poof, damn, hold on. Like, you going to tell me March 3rd, like, this is different? Like, it's not the same? And it's just a lesson learned. But I like where I'm at. And I know that if I had not been in this position, the hunger, the drive, and I had to go and locate the old Tyrone. The old Tyrone was at the bottom. I came from the bottom. And when I got to the top, it felt good, but I worked so hard to get there. I envisioned being a champion so many times that when I actually won that belt, it wasn't like, oh my God, I mean, like I was relieved because I had so much stuff in my life personally. I don't know how I won. Every world title fight, I had the, like, if I unveil, which I will do at some point when it's the right time, if I unveil what's behind the curtains of Tyrone Woodley, what he went through, 99% of anybody who's ever had some bullshit to say about me would be like, oh my God, how the fuck did this dude win 4 world titles against number one contenders? Nobody could figure out the puzzle against fucking Damian Maia at that time. Robbie Lawler was a boogeyman. Fucking Stephen Thompson, you know, he was probably the most difficult training camp to ever do. And it's only so long your luck can go. Darren Till was this up-and-coming fighter. I'm acting like I'm on fucking ESPN. I'm going through the B-roll. Darren Till was this up-and-coming fighter that everybody thought was so much bigger than me, so much more powerful. You know, he's going to back me down and beat me up. And, you know, you think about me being able to do that. That was very significant. The way that I did, how I did it, and I stuck true to myself. I didn't allow what people said and thought, you know, to affect me. And I already am to grips that my legacy is going to be greater when I walk away than it was when I was actually.
Amen. Much love, Tyron. I really appreciate you doing this, my man. Good luck out there. Safe travels back home, and then safe travels back out. And of course, good luck on March 21st. Huge fight in London, no less. Going to enemy territory. What a scene that's going to be against their own guy, Leon Edwards. I really appreciate this, Tyron, and we'll talk to you soon. All right, great stuff there from Tyron Woodley. Appreciate his time very much. And by the way, I just want to mention, it is so surreal being here today, like being at ESPN, the worldwide leader in sports, this epicenter of sports, and just the looks on everyone's faces. The mood here is just very different. It just feels like everyone is in a state of shock and surreal feeling, just going through all of our bodies, our minds, just everyone kind of walking around looking like they're not really sure what to do. So it's weird, but it's somewhat comforting being around sports fans. And I'm sure many people who, covered Kobe Bryant's career doing the show is helping in a weird way. So anyhow, I appreciate Tyron's thoughts. I appreciate, Daniel Cormier's thoughts. And, as we continue to, talk about the sport that we love, we now focus our attention to what happened this past Saturday in Raleigh, North Carolina. What a win for Curtis Blaydes in the main event spot against Junior Dos Santos, winning via second round TKO, his third win in a row, and now very much in that title picture. And he's kind enough to join us right now via the magic of Skype. Curtis, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
I'm doing good, man. Appreciate you guys having me back.
Yeah, thank you very much. And, you know, you're coming off that big win, and I want to talk to you about that big win, but I also did see you, you know, write about Kobe Bryant on your social media. So I just wanted to ask how you're doing and how you're processing this news and what he meant to you.
I mean, it was like you guys were just talking about. It was a pretty weird thing to, like, see scrolling across my phone, getting the updates. Initially, like everyone else, I thought it was fake news, but then when it was like being confirmed by like legitimate ESPN reporters, I knew it was real. And it took about a day for it really to like process. I was with my dad and my brothers, and they're all like pretty big basketball fans. So we were just having discussions about it all day. And Kobe Bryant, to me, he just embodied, like, hard work. And that's all I would ever hear about him. Like, Mamba mentality. Everything about him was basketball, basketball, basketball. He was very driven. He's very detail-oriented. He didn't leave anything up to chance. He worked on all his weaknesses. He didn't really have any weaknesses, and that's why, because he was always in the gym, always putting up shots and everything. And I know the world's going to be a little less bright over the next couple of days as everyone just realizes and accepts that he's no longer with us and we lost a legend.
Amen. Yeah, thank you for that. I couldn't agree more. It does feel like everything is a little darker today. But for you on Saturday, what a great win. What a great performance. Like I said, three in a row. Would you say right now this is the best that you've ever been in your career, that it's all coming together for you now?
Yeah, I would agree. All those years of doing striking with my striking coach, you guys are really, you're going to get to see the evolution of my hands. They've been growing for years now, but it wasn't until this weekend that I was like forced into having to use them, because I'm always going to go with option A wrestling. If I can take you down, that's what I'll do. But Junior wasn't allowing that. We adjusted. And I think the fact that I hadn't used my hands much in previous fights, was, I think that's what made it easier for me to really blossom. He wasn't prepared for me to have a plan B. I think his plan was to evade me, until I got frustrated into making a mistake and just doing like a blind or ugly takedown attempt that would give him that easy uppercut. But I remained composed, and I knew that my opportunity would be there as long as I kept moving my head and high lunge and pumping. I knew something would open up.
When plan A wasn't working initially, were you surprised? Like, did you think you would have an easier time taking him down?
Yeah, I won't lie to you. I knew Junior had an amazing takedown defense, but I believed in my takedown offense. I believed I could get him down. So initially, it was a bit discouraging after, like, going 0-4 in that first round. It was a little discouraging, but I looked at my coach, Vinny Lopez, and he was smiling. He said I was beating him on the feet. And, you know, when you're in there, you don't really process everything. You can't tell if you're winning all the time. But to hear from him, and he's always 100 with me. He won't give me no BS. To hear that I was beating Junior on the feet, I think it made me a little more aggressive with the hands. I was like, okay, if I'm landing, then I'll look to land the heavy one now.
Obviously, you're happy. You beat a former champion. You've now won three in a row. I get all that. But is it a bit of a confusing time, for lack of a better word, because you're not really quite sure? I mean, even DC, who's trying to get that title shot, isn't really quite sure where he stands. And Stipe's status is a little bit up in the air. His health status is up in the air. Is it kind of weird to not know, like, what exactly this win gets you?
Absolutely. I've been on a pretty clear trajectory. I've always had a plan. It's always been like a next move. We've always been able to like project at least one fight ahead. But after this fight, like you said, the heavyweight division after you get past Derek Lewis is pretty hazy. And yeah, that all rests on Stipe's decisions. I know he's got the injury. I know he's going to be out for a little while. But it would be nice if he would make a decision at least. Give us some sort of concrete timeline, like a plan. Like, who does he want? If he wants DC, that's fine. I have no problem waiting. But we don't even know if he wants DC. We don't know what he wants. I'm not gonna lie. It's a bit annoying, frustrating, because I have a lot of respect for Stipe. We've trained together previously, but I didn't envision him being the type of champion to create a logjam like this. So like it feels like he's just soaking up the spotlight, which is well within his right. But in order to be the champion, a champion has to fight. He has to defend the belt. He has to continue to prove that he's the champion. Right now, it'll be a year before he steps back in the octagon, and that's, to me, that's just too long. I think if it gets to like June or July and he still hasn't made a decision, I'm gonna start calling for a defendant or a vacate. No disrespect to him. I think he's an amazing fighter, a really good dude, but this is my prime. I don't have time to wait for old men to soak up the limelight. You need to get out of the way, make room for a new blood.
If they do finally decide to go with Stipe versus DC3, perhaps in the summertime, what makes most sense to you?
Then
for yourself, of course.
If that was the decision, which is that would be great. I would assume that there would be a number one contender fight between me and the winner of Ngannou and Jarzyna. So I would be. That's the only thing I could really think of, because I'm not going after guys right below me anymore. I'm not going for a Volkov. I'm not going for Derek Lewis. I don't even want number one contender fight or Stipe. Those are the only options for me.
So I'm wondering about that scenario, because I agree that would make the most sense. But, of course, you have fought Ngannou twice, and he beat you twice. So is there a part of you that is hoping that he wins so that you can right that wrong? Or do you feel like you actually have a better chance of getting the number one contender fight if Jarzyna wins? Because I feel like I can foresee a scenario where Ngannou wins and he's like, no, I'm not going to fight the guy who I beat twice. I'm just going to sit and wait. So what do you actually think is better for you?
Well, yeah, I would go with the latter. Jarzyna wins.
Yeah,
that's the perfect storm. Because especially after watching him go against Alistair, my training partner right now, Alistair was winning the entirety of that fight. I still think he won. I think that was a premature stoppage, but it is what it is. But based off watching that fight, I'm super. Supremely confident I would be able to destroy Jarzyna.
Yeah, I feel like that's the best case scenario for you, and he's looked good. So you're saying you're not all that impressed with what he's done?
I'm not at all. He beat Alan Crowder with a jab, and no offense, but you're not going to jab me and knock me down on my butt. And then he beat
Arlovski.
Arlovski. That was. Beat him with a backwards swinging hook shot. You're not dropping me with that. It's just, I don't want to say he's getting like lucky, but he's getting some guys with some glass jaws. I know I've gone against a couple guys with glass jaws, but he's really getting by with some glass jaw guys. You know? And then I know we don't like to do MMA math, but we saw what I did to Alistair, and then we saw how long it took for him to finally hit, like, really, really hit Alistair. It took him 5 rounds, like, the entirety of 5 rounds to really hit Alistair. So I just think there's levels to this, and I think my striking is way better than his. I think my overall MMA game is way better than his. I know he can't wrestle, so I don't see his avenue to victory against me.
You know, I know that last year in particular, we were talking about some new gyms. There's gyms like AKA and ATT and Jackson Wink and TriStar that we've been talking about for some time. But last year, it seemed like Fortis MMA really started to come into its own. And of course, City Kickboxing out of New Zealand. Not a lot of talk about Team Elevation. And I feel like there should be more talk about what you guys are doing in Denver, with not only you, of course, leading the charge, but Drew Dober doing what he did last weekend, Corey Sanhagen, who is sort of the forgotten man. You have Neil Magny, of course, who's been there for a while, Justin Gaethje, who has trained out of there, great coaches like Elliot Marshall and the other coaching staff. Do you feel like it's time that more people start talking about you guys as one of the elite gyms in the sport?
Yes, I've been waiting. We don't have the type of guys who like to beat their chest and toot their own horn. Like you just gave the list of names. I'm one of those guys is a me, look at what I'm doing type of guy. One of us is really going to promote ourselves, which that might be our own. That's our own. Oh, we have to do more. We have to do a better job of promoting our gym, because it helps the gym. The more publicity we get, the better the gym does, and that's on us. But we've been building and grinding for at least since I've been there, 3.5 years, and the improvements that I've seen in the gym across the board, especially with guys like Corey saying, hey, I watched him in LFA. I watched him grow. I watched his hands grow. I mean, I've watched him turn into the monster he is. And a lot of people don't, like you said, they don't know who he is. He's a forgotten man, but he might be the most dangerous bantamweight in the game, you know? And I really believe in the coaching staff and the principles that we promote at the gym. It's very family-oriented. It's very from the top all the way down to the bottom. Everyone helps everyone else. There's no nobody feels that they're above the other. We're all equals from, you know, Magny to Gaethje to me. No one thinks they can make their own rules. There's no favorites. Everyone's equal. I just love that. It's very team oriented. It reminds me almost of like a college, like how we all root for each other. We're always down the travel and watch each other. It's very close-knit. And I think that's the strength of our gym.
Austin Hubbard, another name. And by the way, I just wanted to make clear, I wasn't trying to put Sandhagen down. I'm a big Corey Sandhagen fan. I just think that last week he was forgotten because we all remember he was supposed to be the co-main, and I wasn't really pleased with what happened to him with that situation. So hopefully he can get a big fight and get back on track as well. Curtis, I appreciate the time very much. Congratulations. I hope you get what you want next. It's been amazing to see what you've done in your last three fights in particular and throughout your UFC run. It seems like you just continue to get better each and every time out there. So congrats on the win. Enjoy it, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
All right, there he is, Curtis Razor Blades, one of the great nicknames in this sport as well. So a big win for him, and what a run, right? I mean, like 13-2 with one no contest. The only two losses, by the way, to Francis Ngannou, but with some big wins recently, and of course notable wins over Alistair Overeem in Chicago, Mark Hunt, Alexei Oleinik, and then the one this past weekend, Junior Dos Santos. Now, that was the UFC main event winner, but one of those rare nights where UFC and Bellator were going head-to-head. The Bellator main event winner was that woman, Chris Cyborg, who pulled off something that never has been done before. She is now someone who can say that she won the Strikeforce belt, the Invicta belt, the UFC belt, and now the Bellator 145-pound title. She defeated Julia Budd via TKO. It was vintage Cyborg in her adopted, backyard, so to speak, in Southern California. And you see her right here joining us via the magic of Skype. Chris, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations. Parabéns.
Thank you, Ariel. Thank you for having me here. I'm really happy, we have a blessed Saturday, and they bring the belt home, and I'm just very happy.
Yeah, and I see that you're wearing a Los Angeles Lakers jersey. I saw you wearing the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar jersey on Saturday, which was a great touch. Of course, everything changing on Sunday. I know you live in Orange County, right? And I believe Kobe Bryant lived there as well. I'm just curious, what is the mood like in Orange County today? Are you able to identify what people are feeling over there right now?
You know, how's crazy. We have the idea. The idea is using the jersey because Kobe – I was using the jersey when he's going to be final, NBO finals, using jersey people, the players, big names, and just for give the opportunity to share the names. And I feel very happy because, I wear the Lakers colors and his play with Lakers colors and show, and this is Saturday. I was really sad. I still sad about what's happening. He's a big example. He's the real champion inside the playing games and big athlete. And he's a champion outside too. He's helped a lot of communities in Brazil. He's helped here in LA. When he did the work with the homeless, I have him like an example. And we need athletes like this. It's very sad what's happened, I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing. And then I'm just thankful that I did the fight before for the jersey colors and represented him and his big examples. For sure, it's going to be a lot of people's hearts.
Mm. Considering everything that you went through last year, the ups and downs, and even your run in the UFC, would it be fair to say that maybe this particular title victory is more special than any of the other ones in the past?
I feel like God's so amazing. I was so happy at the fight. Because I lost my belt, my title is at 4. And I got another belt there, you know. I feel like, you know, God do everything for my reason. He knows my heart. He knows how I was feeling fighting UFC. I was my heart not happy. I was not motivated. And God said, no, Chris, you know, you're going to have to, make you, you're going to lose a fight. And you're going to have the new chapter for your life. And he's back to the same place. And then, you know, I'm doing world champion again. And I'm very thankful. If it never happened something at the form of Amanda Nunes, I was never going to be Bellator champion. I'm in a place I have respect and happy, you know, and I work happy with the people around me. It's amazing.
What's the difference, at least for you right now, after you've now done one full, you know, fight with them between Bellator and UFC?
I think it'd be at the camp, you know, the camp, and I have any problem. You know, Scott Coker, very polite, very respectful, all the athletes over there. Don't try manipulate the media against me. You know, want to work together with the fighters. You can see treat every fighter the same way. There's no have a game, you know, no have game. They talk about you, no have game. You know, you speak, you have a word. You say something and then it happened. You know, and this is the most important. For me, it's not even a money problem. It's the respect. You know, this is the first thing. And God bless me a lot of this contest, Bellator, you know. Very, very, very different UFC.
Saturday night, was that your first time back at the Forum since the Nunes fight, or did you ever go there for another fight?
No, it's 1 year. It's,
wow.
I'm on the Nunes, and then, but you know, when I was there, I went to arena. I remember every single moment. I remember when I lost the fight. I remember I get out of the cage. I feel released. I remember every month people looking at me crazy because I'm doing interview after they lost.
Yeah.
After 14 years and defeated, people look at me like, oh, she's crazy. You know, but I was not sad. I was in my heart. I was not sad that time. And to see how it worked, I was not sad because God had another plan for me. Bring me back there and get a Bellator belt.
When you lost that fight, was that already in the back of your mind? Like, oh, now that I'm not a champion, I'm no longer tied to the organization. Perhaps this now opens the door for me to eventually move on. Is that why you were, because I remember asking you about this, like, wow, you're handling this so well. Usually when someone loses for the first time in so long, they're down, they're depressed, they don't want to talk about it. You seem perfectly content.
You know, I was not happy. I don't know why. I don't know why does that happen. You lose, you win. You know, I don't know why. But I won't think, I was not feel sad in my heart. I didn't feel sad in my heart. You know, I not. And then I knew something good come from that thing. And everybody's saying, but I knew. And then, okay, if I was still champion of UFC, I was never going to have the opportunity to leave. And I was not happy there. I was not motivated to train. I was not happy. And I was going to have to work not happy. And, okay, I have to lose. I lose that title, yes. But, you know, and now I'm at one place. I'm happy. You know, I feel wake up happy. You know, I don't have any problem. Just focus on training. Continue doing. You know, have nobody damage my legacy. Nobody lying about me. You know, show people who I'm not, who I am. And then this is nice thing.
That ending was great. I mean, the flurry at the end, it truly was vintage Chris Cyborg. But I'm wondering, Julia, was she tougher than you thought that she would be? Did she last longer than you expected?
Nah, you know, I was training for the 5 rounds. I knew Julia, it's tough because she's 8 years undefeated. You know, she's the real 145 pounds, 8 years undefeated. And I show really respect for her, trained really hard. You know, I did it. This fight, I love this fight because I can show a lot of things I usually don't do in the fight, you know, and people can see a little bit about Cyborg, you know. I feel like this is new era, you know, new era for me. And I did my camp again at South Africa, and Rich Blum's amazing coach, have an amazing team over there. And then helped me put together my MMA, you know. He showed me, you know, drills I usually do, but for me, focus more from can do in the fight. And they put together. This is really helping for the great performance to the fight this Saturday.
Are you going to continue doing your camps in South Africa? It seems to be working well. Do you like that setup?
Yes, that team's my family now. You know, it's It's I love each person over there. Then very nice, very humble people. And you're going to see a lot of fighters from that gym at the Bellator for sure. And then you know, they motivate me. They motivate the time I really need. And it's my family now. I love them. For sure, I go back there. I love being over there. I already make friends. And Ryan, the kids, I have a lot of connections. Live over there, and it's going to be amazing.
A lot was made of the fact that you could be the highest paid female fighter in the history of the sport. Did you make more money on Saturday night than you ever have before?
I did some. I know Sam. I make money when I fought Sam Card, John Jones, and some card. But for sure, I make my money there. Any option UFC gave me before I leave.
Okay, so you're happy. And how many fights did you sign for? Could you tell us that?
I know fights. I don't believe I signed the fights. I signed the time.
Here. Oh, okay. So years?
Yes.
How many years?
I don't know if I can allow to say.
Well, why not? What's the big deal? I know how Stephen Curry signs for this much. Kevin Durant signs. I'm not talking about the numbers. I'm talking about the years.
I think we did it 2 years.
Okay.
2 years.
But would it be fair to say you want to end your career with Bellator?
Yes, I want to end my career in Bellator.
Okay. Sure. How quickly do you want to return now?
I don't know. You know, when Scott is telling me, I think they maybe didn't have a plan. When I'm not having any injury. I feel healthy. I just want to enjoy a little bit my family and I can back to work soon, then I want to fight again.
Who do you think makes sense for you next?
You know, the one thing very nice, Bellator have a lot of girls.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of girls fight. And, no, I don't like to call out to any girls. This is my amazing team now. Look, everybody's so happy. And I love the colors. It's amazing. Guys want to be jersey, Chris. Cyber shirts, gold and purple. You can go on my website. I love this color, man. I love it.
It's amazing.
And then, yes. I don't like to pick the names, you know, at all, but have a lot of girls in the Bellator. It can be an exciting fight. Arlene, it can be Katsinganu. Have a lot of girls over there, you know. I can fight.
What do you think of the idea of I feel like the Zingano fight is the biggest fight, but what do you think of the idea of her getting an immediate title fight? Or do you think she should win one fight in Bellator and then, if that goes well, then fight you?
You know, Zingano, she's an amazing athlete. She's the girl beat Amanda Nunes. It's going to be a perfect match if this happens, you know. I don't know how she feels, how she's ready to fight back, you know, but she's going to be a great challenge because she's the girl beat Amanda Nunes.
Recently, I was alerted of a relationship that you developed in South Africa with that young boy who is battling cancer, and I think you just referenced him. And what you've done as far as philanthropy over the last couple of years is really amazing with Justin Renz Foundation, and you know, I know you do things all the time in Brazil with the children's hospitals. I was just wondering how that young boy was feeling, if you had an update from him, and I don't know if you knew whether or not he watched the fight on Saturday.
You know, I talked to his mom before my fight, and he is know very well. He's in hospital, and then he's doing chemo, and he's sick. He's cannot talk to me, make video for me. And I was touch very emotional before the fight. I fight that night for him, and then I did promise him I was going to bring the belt for him, and I will bring it to him. And but I make a video for him. His mama told him about the fight, and he's watching a little bit of the fight, I think. And yeah, but we get a connection, you know. That kid is touched my heart a lot, and he's came for touching a lot of people around him. And I'm just excited. I want to be excited to go over there and show the belt for him and spend the time with him. And because, man, he's an amazing kid.
You just met him while you were swimming, right?
Yes, I was reading. You know, I was reading all the time. And when I stay in the pool, I was not usually jumping in the pool, just reading. And then all the time he's watching me, see what I'm doing, sit around me. And I was reading. And they say, asking me for enjoy the pool for him. And I said, man, how's I going to say no for him? And then we started a friends relationship together. And then we go to the pool. Other times he bring candy for me when he see me. You know, I start going for him when he's doing treatments between my trains. And we start to build one great relationship. And his family didn't know who I am before. And I told them what I do for work. And then, you know, it's funny because when I did my weight 140, I was heavy. Something with people, you know, need the help of the cancer. And then after that, I make 140 the first time catch weight because then, you know, I'm a mother god in one hospital in Brazil, the cancer, kids cancer. You know, I feel like we have to fight for the people those cannot fight. And this I'm doing a fight. And when I met Ryan, you know, I knew it's one God sign helping him and continue doing my journey.
By the way, speaking of weighing, 143.8, you don't usually weigh that low for 145. What should we make of this?
You know, I was feel great. And then I have the opportunity. I wake up in the weight. And then people say, you want to drink water and eat something? I say, no, I'm just going to wait. And then, you know, I just go low a little bit. But I was feel great. You know, I think we did it. Every time my cut's getting better, you know. I'm not feel tired one moment at the fight. Nothing. Not tired.
Amazing. Did you see, by the way, Gina Carano's tweets about you? And if so, what did you think of them?
You know, I didn't check it. I think she saw about that she lost her bet. I think she's betting Julia Budd.
Oh.
She's never going to bet again.
She was giving you props. She was saying congratulations and whatnot.
Nice. I think I'm about to say another thing.
No, what were you going to say?
She put I'm never going to bet again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, you know, take Gina, I have a lot of respect for her. And very special work, Scott Coker, when I fought her. And then, you know, she's doing great. People love her. MMA, she's a big example fighter. And then what she's doing now.
And finally, I'm just wondering, because we just had this big debate about who the female fighter of the decade was. You, of course, Amanda, Ronda. Do you think you were the best female fighter of the past decade?
I'm a normal person. You know, I just like to do what I do. I let my fans think that. I'm never going to say I'm the greatest. I'm never going to say I like to be... I like to let my fans think about this, then figure out who the greatest fighter the decade.
All right. Fair enough. I had a feeling that you would say something like that, but I was just curious where you stood on the debate. Congratulations. Like I said, it was vintage, and it was so cool to see you back in that same arena, kind of righting that wrong of a year and a couple of months ago against Amanda Nunes. Back at the Forum, back doing your thing, and back on top. So congratulations, Chris. I really appreciate the time, and enjoy the victory.
Okay, thank you, Ariel. Thank you, all my fans, for support. Show up at the Forum. And I say, remember, we're going to have the Pink Belt Fitness Girls Train 2 days together. You want more information, go on my Instagram. And then YouTube channel going to be the last video about the last chapter, the episode for the fight, Wednesday. Make sure you guys check it out. I love you guys. Thank you for the support. And then I'm going to pray for the family, the Colby. For God to heal in your hearts, and take care, you guys. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chris. Parabéns. Congratulations. Obrigado. Thank you. Great stuff there from Chris. And that was a fun card on Saturday. You know, I don't love when they're going back and forth, UFC Bellator, because it's hard to, you know, to keep track of it all. But I will say the UFC card essentially ended when the Bellator main card started, so there wasn't a lot of conflict there. They had the continuation of the Grand Prix, the Bantamweight Grand Prix, and you see over there Darion Caldwell defeating Aaron Borks, and then afterwards AJ McKee went into the cage. I can't wait for that fight. That is going to be a phenomenal fight, and a really great semifinal match for their Grand Prix. Obviously, Sergio Pettis, as you see right over there, winning in his Bellator debut. What a great performance that was. Great to see him back. He looked very good at 135, very healthy as well. And really cool to see his brother, Anthony Pettis, in attendance cheering him on. So happy for him. Raymond Daniels with the win. And what about Aaron Pico, who he had such high hopes for when he came into the UFC and was obviously, you know, deemed this uber prospect and, of course, has stumbled over the last couple fights, and his career in general has been a little up and down. Now doing his first full camp with Jackson Wink, with the likes of Brandon Gibson, who I think very highly of, the striking coach over there, one of the striking coaches out of that camp. What about him looking so good? And I know, you know, he wasn't fighting a big name opponent, if you will, but good to see him back on top. Great finish. And the celebration was back to the Matador celebration that he's been doing after some of his victories. So another good night for Bellator in Southern California at the Forum, UFC in Raleigh. This weekend, no UFC, by the way, but later in the program, we will talk to another fighter who was victorious on that Bellator card, a product of the Nick Diaz Academy, friend of the show, the Florida boy, AJ Agazarm, who I thought had his best pro win to date. So we'll talk to him about that. We'll also talk to Michael Chiesa, who was victorious in the co-main event on Saturday against RDA. And I have a little surprise for Michael Chiesa. I'm not going to tell you what it is right now, but I have a bit of a surprise for him, and I hope he likes it. I hope he enjoys it. That is still to come. He'll be our last guest of the day. Later on in the show, we will talk to Owen Roddy. In around 20 minutes or so, we'll talk to Owen Roddy about Conor McGregor's win, which now feels like it was a really long time ago all of a sudden, and what could be next for him. We will also talk to Sean O'Malley, who will be back in action on March the 7th in Las Vegas, UFC 248. He meets Jose Quinones a little over 2 years after his last fight. Of course, has had to deal with a lot of USADA issues, but was recently given the green light and was booked on this card in Las Vegas. And you'll recall when he last fought 2 years ago, he's undefeated, so flashy, so fun. We all thought, all right, this guy is going to be one of the new faces of the UFC, but the last 2 years have obviously derailed his career. So hopefully for his sake, he's able to get back in there and get back on track. We'll also talk to another fighter who is currently dealing with some USADA issues, Jessica Penne. She'll be joined by her manager, Brian Butler, to talk about the state of her career. She recently posted a very lengthy statement on her social media around 2 or so weeks ago, talking about her issues and how her career may very well be over. She's a former Invicta FC strawweight champion and a former UFC title contender. And like I said, then Agazarm and Chiesa. So plenty more show to come in a matter of moments. I do believe we are going to be joined by Macy Barber. And last weekend in Las Vegas, not this past weekend, 2 weekends ago, she suffered her first pro defeat against Roxanne Modafferi. And since then, her father, who I have talked to her about, has drawn the ire of the MMA community because some people thinking that he is diminishing the victory for Roxanne, saying that, you know, Macy injured her knee in the first 10 seconds of the fight and whatnot. But no denying the fact that Macy showed an incredible amount of heart in that fight, an incredible amount of determination. She did not win the fight. She lost via decision. And we recently found out around a week ago that she will now require ACL surgery. So let us say hello now to Macy and get her thoughts on it all. I do appreciate her coming on the show, especially after the loss. Macy, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good. Physically, I'm not so great. But, you know, I can't complain. I have a great, I have an amazing life, and get to go and have surgery and enjoy this next chapter of my life. So, big.
Do you know when the surgery will be yet?
I'm actually going to meet with the surgeon on Friday. So, like, this coming Friday. And then I think we're going to have surgery on, like, Monday.
Okay. And do you feel physical pain right now, like, all the time?
I do. I mean, it aches, and sorry, I keep looking at it. I'll show you.
Okay. Oh, there it is. Nice. Yeah.
It aches, and it's hard to walk, but I've actually gotten a lot of motion back in it, just because I'm stubborn and I'm like, this is not going to stop me. So I'm doing everything I can.
So the moment when you injured the knee has become like a big point of contention. Do you recall when this happened?
Yeah. I know I've heard a lot of things about it, but for me, I mean, when I did it, I did it in the first round. It didn't hurt until, like, it didn't hurt really bad until the second round, but I did it in, like, the very first movement that I did. I, like, stepped on her foot in the first round, and I, like, overshifted, and I overstepped, and it popped, and it was like, oh, no, that's not good, but it also was not, like, terrible, and I knew that I had to fight through it, and so, you know, I just kept going, and by the second round, I was sitting down, and when I stood up from the stool, I was like, this is really not good, but I didn't tell anybody in the first round, you know, I didn't tell my coaches, because I'm just trying to hide it, you know, I was trying to keep it from them, because I didn't think it was that bad, but as I stood up from the second, from in between the first and second round, it was like, I can't, this is really bad.
At any point did you consider not fighting anymore? Did you want them to, quote unquote, throw in the towel?
No. You know, I talked to every single one of the coaches, and Duke just told me, he's like, when you looked at me and the way you were talking to the doctor, he's like, you were not wanting us to stop it. So I didn't. I never once thought of quitting, because, you know, that's what I signed up to do. And this is a life I chose. You know, this is, when you step in there, you know that there's a chance that you're going to have an injury. You're going to have something happen that, you know, could put you out. And that's what we choose to do. You know, we didn't choose to have, or at least me, I didn't sign up to have perfect days every single day, you know, and I understand that there has to be a winner and a loser. And unfortunately, you know, Saturday night was not my night. Regardless of the leg, you know, obviously that I truly feel plays a factor in my performance. And I know that, you know, and I'd love to go back and show that to everybody else, you know, show what I know to everybody else. But at the end of the day, you know, you can't control the things that happen, but you can control what you choose to let them, you know, do in that situation. And, you know, I wanted to push through, and I wanted to show that I'm not just I need to have a perfect day to fight. You know, it was a very unperfect day, and I wanted to fight, so I did that.
So the statement from your dad that you injured the knee in the first 10 or so seconds of the fight, that is an accurate statement as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, it is. It did. It popped. I felt it. You know, I had several doctors look back, just because we wanted to I guess, make sure and prove to everybody else, you know, what I already knew. But it doesn't matter, you know, like, whether I injured it in the first 5 seconds or the last 5 seconds. I did injure it in the first 5 seconds, but nobody else cares about that. And that's not for me to try and argue and explain. You know, that's something that I'll know in my heart forever. And I knew that from the very first 5 seconds of the fight. But whether that plays a part in your win and loss, nobody cares about that except for me, you know, and that's something that I'm going to have to deal with, and I'm going to have to, you know, fight through and understand, you know. That's why I'm not taking the loss so hard, because I knew that I did everything I could, and I did it on one leg. And you know what? I couldn't win on one leg, but I did push through the fight, and credit to Roxy, you know, she's good, and she won.
How do you feel about some of the criticism your father has received for his post-fight comments? Do you feel like it's fair? Does it bother you that people are upset or taking shots at him or saying that what he's saying is not sportsmanlike? How do you feel about all of that? I'm sure you've seen some of it.
You know, it doesn't bother me, because every dad is going to have a certain reaction, you know, and that's the way he's going to react. You know, I'm his daughter, and I went out there and I fought, and he wants to justify. He wants to be like, no, she didn't lose because she had this leg thing, you know, which, true or not, which it is, that's his view, you know. That's him trying to protect and prove, you know, he's always going to be on my side. He's going to fight to the death. And I do appreciate that. And, you know, you can't expect to be in this life and not have thick skin. So what people say about him and what people think, I mean, yeah, it sucks, but I don't read stuff about it. You know, I don't read things unless other people send them to me. So I try not to pay attention to it, because everybody has their own opinion, and everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but it's your choice if you want to listen to it or not.
There was an interesting sequence towards the end of the fight where the doctor checked you out and appeared to diagnose you with, at the time, a partially torn ACL. And I know I spoke to your father about this on the phone, but I'm wondering how you feel about that, because it seems like he felt like maybe Roxanne learned about your
knee injury as a result of what the doctor was saying. Do you feel like that was the case, and do you feel like it should have been handled a little differently?
You know, I've thought about that a lot. The whole leg thing with him coming in and checking, I mean, if a doctor wants to come in and check and ask you if you're good, and if you give them a solid answer of, I'm fine, let me continue. Like, if I say that I'm fine, and I'm not, like, a wishy-washy kind of, like, I think I'm all right, or, like, acting as though I'm hurt, then I think that he should have, like, let me continue. And if he was going to call the fight, he should have called the fight. But to sit me down and check my leg and have everyone in the world seeing that, you know, oh, she's injured, let's capitalize on that for Roxanne. You know, because I've said this before, if I was in Roxanne's situation, I'm not as nice as her, especially in the fight. I know that it's a I'm going to win or you're going to win situation. And if there's someone who's hurt, I mean, I would capitalize on that. You know, I would have stood her up and I would have been like, no, I'm going to kick your leg until you fall over. I'm just thankful that, you know, that she's not that kind of person and that mean, you know. But that could have happened, and I could have been hurt way worse because of the doctor showing that I was injured in a fight. So I don't necessarily agree at all with him sitting me down and checking me. You know, if he's going to check and assess the stability of someone's leg and then continue to say that they have a torn ACL and that you're fine, I mean, clearly you're not fine. You have one leg that's like basically incompetent. And, I don't know. It was just kind of a weird situation, but at the same time, like, I was in the moment and I wasn't really, like, I guess, processing it all. You know, I just was trying to push through, and that's what I wanted to do. And so I just told him, you know, I'm fine. And I wasn't going to argue with him, you know, for sitting me down. I tried, but it didn't work.
Do you think the knee got worse? He said partially torn. Now we find out it's a full tear. Do you think that you further injured the knee by competing in that third round?
You know, I think what happened is, honestly, I could have, like, partially torn it in the first bit, and then just as I kept moving, could have torn it all the way. You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You don't know if it was fully torn from the very beginning, or if it was partially torn from the very beginning and then fully torn at the end. I do know that, you know, after that first round, I was noticing that I wasn't very stable, but I had the muscles to kind of protect it, and the pain was, like, kind of able to be withstood. But then the second round, I just realized, you know, the pain was getting worse. And as I went to step, like, the stability just wasn't even there. Like, there was nothing there. And every time I tried to step or every time I tried to move, it was just less and less of, like, anything to resist against me. And by the third round, you know, I remember trying to, like, throw a Superman, and I was lifting my leg, and I was trying to, like, think. You know, because it was so clear to me. It was like, I knew exactly what I needed to do, but every single time I tried to do something, I was like, oh, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. Like, I need to lift my leg. I was trying to find some way to put my leg to where I would get power with my strikes, but not plant on my leg, because I knew that if I planted on my leg, I would fall over again. Because, you know, as a lot of people saw in the second round, I fell over, like, from the one shot. And it wasn't, she did land the shot, but it was like, I couldn't, like, my mental processing was, like, I wanted to step back, but I couldn't step back. And then when I did try to step back, it was, like, a little bit delayed. So she did catch me and, like, graze me with that one hand, but my leg was gone. So I couldn't land. So I just fell over, and it hurt really bad. But you know what? It was good. And I've told a lot of people, you know, this is a crazy life, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. I wouldn't even go back and take any of that back, you know? Not even the loss. You know, I lost, but it's fine.
I appreciate your candor and your honesty, especially when you say, I'm not as nice as Roxy. I would have tried to capitalize. She went out of her way and said, no, I didn't try to further injure the knee when I noticed that she was actually injured. Now that you've been in that situation and you're the injured fighter, let's say in 2 years you're fighting someone who injures their leg. Are you saying, even though you've been in that situation and are thankful that she didn't do it to you, you would do it to someone else?
As bad as it sounds, if that was the determining factor in me winning or losing, I probably would. You know, that's the mean side of me, and that's not necessarily right. But if I'm trying to do everything I can to win, and I know that I'm okay, we'll take that back. If I'm down a round and I need that to win, I probably would. You know, but I'd probably bite through my lip and cry afterwards, because you know what, this sucks. This really sucks. You know, I'm looking at 9 months of not being able to compete, and it's crushing me. But we'll get it.
A big part of your story was trying to become the youngest champion in UFC history. Do you feel like now that goal is no longer attainable?
I don't. By the time I'm done with this surgery and this rehab, you know, I'll be 22 still. So that's, you know, I'll have a little over a year to achieve that. And I'm going to do everything in my power to do that. You know, I truly believe that I am on the track to doing that. And this is just, you know, a mountain that I was presented with, and I have to climb it. And I think it's going to make me even better as a champion, and it's going to make me better in the gym. It's going to make me stronger and more mentally prepared for when I do reach that title fight. So I'm looking forward to it.
How was the weight cut? And do you feel like it's inevitable that at some point you'll be a 135er?
I don't. You know, this is probably a blessing in disguise with my knee, actually, is what a lot of the Performance Institute, Clint, is saying. The cut to 125, I mean, I'm still trying to fight from when I was cutting from 115. For whatever reason, my body didn't like that. Putting yourself through that drastic of a cut really messed me up. And then I just tried to keep fighting, you know, and taking multiple fights and cutting weight over and over, and it became harder and harder. And so this could be helpful, you know, that I don't have to cut weight for another 9 months, and it can allow my body to reset and get the fuel that it needs. But I'm never going to be a 135er. I would probably take a fight short notice if it was like the right fight and it was good and whatever, you know, I would take a fight at 135, but I'm a 125 pound fighter, and I think that this injury is going to help me really help with the cut. But the cut for this last fight, I actually walked into it lighter than I did for the last time. But I was also dealing with like not feeling very good. You know, my brother had been sick for a while. So, that has nothing to do with my performance, obviously, but, the cut was not very fun. You know, I was really tired. But it was all right.
You're obviously a very confident young woman, and you're very sure of yourself, and that's obviously coming through as your career starts to develop. But when you are that confident, and when you do express your lofty goals, when you stumble, especially in our social media age, people like to celebrate one's demise. And this has happened to you, right, on social media. People are like, oh, she got what she deserved, karma, all this stuff. How do you process that? Do you see that stuff, and does it cut deep for you?
You know, it doesn't, but I do see a lot of it, and at least they're watching. You know, that means that they're paying attention. You know, if they hate me that much, they're watching, and they want to see me lose. So that means they want to see me either way. Whether they want to see me win or they want to see me lose, they still want to see something. Letting that get to me, you know, the only thing that really irritates me, or could really irritate me, is people that I look up to, you know, throwing trash. But you know what? They don't, because everybody who knows what I've been through, you know, from teammates, from coaches, from a lot of different people, you know, I've got nothing but support. You know, one that stood out to me was Anthony Rumble Johnson. He sent me a message, and he sent a very encouraging message, you know, telling me to keep my head up, and that anybody who thinks that I don't know exactly what he said, but anybody who doesn't believe that, you know, pushing through that is incredible, he said, is a clown. And it's true. You know, anybody who's been through that kind of situation, anybody who's fought in a cage, anybody who's had to deal with an injury or something, they have an understanding, and the people who are just have never done that, have never been in a cage, have never been injured, have never, you know, had goals in the sense of like trying to accomplish something that nobody else has ever done. They have no clue. So for them to talk, it really is invalid. And what other people think of me is none of my business. So that's just something I've learned and I've tried to really apply to my life.
Appreciate you doing this, Macy. And I want to wish you the best
in the upcoming surgery. Have a speedy recovery. Always appreciate your time. It's always great talking to you, and looking forward to the return, the comeback. That should be an interesting story to follow. So thank you very much to you and your family for doing this, and enjoy your vacation as well.
Thank you very much.
All right, there she is, Macy Barber, looking forward to her return. That's going to be a great part of her story, and her her upcoming surgery will be a part of that story, but hoping for the best, speedy recovery, and we'll see her hopefully maybe by the end of the year. She said around 9 months or so. ACL is always a tricky one, but one guy who did come back relatively quick from an ACL way back when, around 2014, was Conor McGregor, and a man who knows a thing or two about Conor McGregor, the man who was victorious in the main event at UFC 246, is that man, his head striking coach for so many years over at SBG in Ireland, the great Owen Roddy, kind enough to join us now as we are still glowing after what he did two Saturdays ago in Las Vegas. Owen, my man, what's the crack? How are you?
How are you?
It's good to talk to you, my friend, and congratulations again to you and the team. It was really cool to see you guys so happy in the locker room afterwards. It felt nostalgic for you. You've had so many great moments with Conor in Las Vegas throughout his career. Where did this one rank, considering the comeback and everything that he had been through and the stakes involved? For you personally, where did this particular performance and victory rank?
That's probably up there in the top, Ariel. You know, just to see what Conor's came through over the past year, and then to see the work he's put in, you know, not only in the training camp, but before the training camp, all the strength and conditioning he's been doing with the McGregor Fast guys and the work he's been doing in Crumlin and in SBG and stuff. It's great to see it all come together and for him to go in and put on a performance like he did. So it's probably up there in the top performances, most definitely.
I know that you were confident and everyone was feeling good and saying the right things going to this fight, but honestly, did you think it would go down like that, 40 seconds or so, outlanding him, you know, outstriking him 19 to nothing in significant strikes? Did you think it would go like that one-sided?
No. Well, it's hard to know. Like, I mean, you're dealing with Cerrone, who's a phenomenal fighter and has loads of tricks, and he's got plenty of weapons and stuff. But I did know that, you know, kind of going in a good place in his mind, confident, enjoying his training and in phenomenal shape. I knew that once he lands, it's going to be very tough for Cerrone to come back from that. And that's the way the fight went, you know. I think I said to you, Ariel, before the fight, before you did the interview, that Conor's going to come out fast, and I don't think Cerrone's going to be ready for the pace Conor's going to set. And I think that's what happened. Conor came out, he was aggressive, he was fast, and to be honest, Cerrone didn't even get off the mark, you know. Mm.
Now, what about those shoulder strikes? Are you the one who taught him those? Are you the guy?
You know, that's a Conor original, man. What he's been doing for years, like, people are so shocked. Like, oh my God, he's been using the shoulder strikes. I've seen a couple of memes. Well, there you go. There's him against Carl Pendritz doing it. And he's been doing it in camp. And it's, you know, as Conor hit you with that, and that he can legally hit you with, he'll hit you with, you know. But it was phenomenal. And for him to do so much damage with it.
Right.
I believe he fractured Cerrone's orbital and he fractured his nose and stuff.
Yeah.
The shoulder strikes, it goes to show what kind of power he's generating.
Have you ever felt one of those?
No, thank God.
It's amazing because I have seen some fighters say those kinds of strikes shouldn't have the effect that they had. And you know how it is with Conor, always trying to diminish his skills or his accomplishments. But those were legit. I mean, this talk that it was fixed and all this stuff, you just look at the impact while watching. Those are legit. It's very clear that they're doing the damage, as you mentioned, broken orbital, broken nose. It's just amazing that he can strike and actually strike that effectively with the shoulder.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, man. He is a genius, Conor. You know, when it comes to being in that octagon, there's very few people that can do it the way he does it, man. He's just so switched on. His ability to see shots that nobody does, like, you know, not many people are thinking of, you know, cracking people with their shoulder. And that's just to upset people, you know. That's, you know, if he had sat there in the clinch over under and just, you know, fumbled for underhooks and stuff, you know, it might have been different. But kind of so switched on, and he capitalizes on opportunities. He's seen the opportunity to land those shoulders. He landed them with serious power, and did the damage. You know, I think it's hilarious when you hear about people saying it's fixed. You know, there's definitely easier ways to fix fights than to win and get a broken orbital and a broken nose and take a head kick. You know what I mean? Get, like, there's easier ways to do it, but, you know, people will always criticize and stuff. But, you know, I can tell you, Cerrone didn't think it was fixed, you know. And a fair play to Cerrone as well, man. He was in there. He, you know, he tried to stay in there, but Conor was just too good for him.
I asked John Kavanaugh this question last week, and I wanted to get your take as well. I asked him, if I would have told you around a year ago now that, you know, it would end up like this, that the story would turn this way, and in 2020 he'd be looking like this and fighting like this and be in this state, would you have believed me? And he said, honestly, no, it wasn't going in that direction. What about you? Did you see this coming, or did you also feel like maybe you guys would never be back in these situations on top?
It was hard to know. You know, Conor's got so many, it's kind of sort of juggle, you know, I don't know how many different companies and businesses he has. And then he's got two young kids as well at home. He's recently just moved into a house, so he's had a lot on in the past, you know, 2 years or whatever. So it was hard to know when it was going to come back, but I did feel he was going to come back. He still has that drive in him, and he still feels like he's a lot to prove. So I knew he was going to get back at it at some point. I just didn't know when. But you know, 2019 was a building year, I think, for Conor. He was in the background, working on his conditioning, working on his boxing, working on everything, and just preparing and getting ready to go. All right, I know he did want to fight last year as well. It didn't come to pass, but he's been working very, very hard, and it goes to show when you see a motivated Conor McGregor, he's a devastating fighter.
He told me before the fight, I'm taking one day off, and then on Monday, I'm back to training. I want to be active. I'll fight in March if they want. I want to get three in, maybe even four. I know you're back home, and he's still in the States. I saw him at the Grammys yesterday, but can you confirm that he is keeping up with this schedule? Is he actively training?
Yeah, he's still training. He wanted to train on the Sunday morning, Ariel. I'm like, the hell? Well, to be honest, I was having a few drinks as well, so I was like, you're probably better off resting, Conor, give yourself. No, but he's thinking of going to the on the Sunday morning. I believe he did strength and conditioning on the Monday. I think he was doing the rower. That was the plan. And then I think he was at the Grammys and stuff. So he's straight back at it.
Wow, that is amazing. And so let me ask you, because everyone's debating, the big question now is, who's next for him? If he comes to you and says, all right, coach, who should be next? Who do we got? What's your pick? Who are you saying?
You know, I know John said Gaethje. I think that would be a good fight. You know, Masvidal would be a cracking fight as well at 170. To be honest, I don't really mind who it is. I think Conor going in, motivated, enjoying the training the way he is, can be any of them. I really believe that, you know, people were questioning him, can he carry that weight, that power up into that 170 weight class? Look, I'd never seen him like so ferocious in there. Like, the shots he was throwing when Cerrone hit the ground were ferocious. And you know what? Not many people on this earth can take those shots, you know, so I think he's got lots of options. It's always Conor's choice. Conor, whatever motivates Conor the most is the fight that he will take next. And, you know, as soon as I find out, I start watching the tape.
Right. And he hasn't given you any indication as to who motivates him at the moment?
No, not yet. No, okay. He hasn't said that. So.
What do you prefer, given everything that you just said, 170 or 155 right now? Would you like to see him stay at 170 for a bit, considering how good he looked in that fight?
Yeah, I would, because he proved the point that the power carries over to that way. He's not worried about cutting weight. His body fat is low. He's in phenomenal shape, and he looked like he enjoyed it in there. So I wouldn't mind him at 170. Like Masvidal, I think is a huge one that people would want. You know, he said Diaz again as well, Diaz 3, which could be another big one. And then I do like the idea of Gaethje as well.
Yeah.
And even at I know Conor mentioned he'd be ready to go if Ferguson or Khabib dropped out as well. So who knows? The most important thing is Conor's mad to go again. He's fit and ready. He didn't take any knocks in that fight, and he's motivated. So for me, that's the most important thing. Whoever we get next is not that important.
And by the way, I had the, obviously you saw me there. I had the privilege of doing the post-fight interview with him in the locker room, but that was, you know, at least like 20 or 25 minutes after I think you guys were in there and got some alone time. Could you give us some insight? Like, what was it like back there? When it was just the team, after everything this team has been through, and the ups and downs over the past year, I think we saw in the thrill and, the thrill of victory and the agony, or whatever that video thing, thrill and victory or whatever it's called, that the UFC puts out, like you guys had thrill and agony. Thank you, Corbett Jake. It was like a little bit of a huddle that you guys were having. What was that like? What was the mood like in there? Because it almost seemed like he was just sort of appreciative, but, you know, expected this and wasn't, you know, overly celebrating. It was just like, yeah, this is what we expected, and now on to the next, business like, if you will. What was the mood like for you?
For me, I mean, I bleeding lost the plot, to be totally honest. I just I know, like, if you see the little, you know, the way the UFC do the little videos, yeah, in the corner, like, I lost me rag. You know, so happy for me, because it, like, I don't even know what he's went through in the last, you know, 18 months or so, but it hasn't been easy for him. And there's been a lot of pressure. I know Conor, he performs at his best when he's under that pressure, under those big lights. But it's still a lot of pressure. And, you know, technically he was coming off two losses as well. And, you know, from when I used to fight, I came off two losses as well. And it's a hard thing to come back from for any man. And he did it with such perfection. I was just so relieved, and we were just so happy for him, just because of the way he's been training and the way everything has went for him. He's been so dedicated, he's been so motivated, he's been in a good place, and for it all to go the way it did, I think everyone was delighted. He was up over the moon himself. He just came back, and then I think he just took the time to soak it all in and enjoy it, and just be appreciative of what he's went through over the past 18 months, and what he's came through, and what it's made of him in the last 18 months, you know.
I love the difference between your celebration and John's celebration. John was just kind of, yeah, okay, let me take this all in, and you just jumped in there. But that's good. It's good to have different perspectives on the celebration. And what about that, man, snap of you and Tony Robbins back there, just sort of cozying up with the big man? What a guy, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great to meet Tony Robbins. So, you know, I mean, as I said, I've been a big fan of Tony Robbins for the past maybe 10 years or so. My brother gave me his book, and I read it. And yeah, he's great to get you motivated and keep you motivated and setting goals and trying to walk towards those goals. So to have him backstage and just watch him go through the motions with Conor and give him little things to focus on, I think it's definitely helped Conor, you know.
And last thing before I let you go, I understand there's an update on that amateur program that you talked about last time on the on the show, the NUCA program, and that show coming up in February in Central Florida. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so we're having our first event. Tickets are on sale today via Ticketmaster. So it is NUCA MMA. It is on in UCF, Florida, on the 28th of February. We've got eight colleges with a certain amount of athletes all competing against each other in an amateur event. It's the first of its kind, and we're bringing amateur MMA to the colleges. So it's very, very exciting. So we hope to sell out the arena and give college students and college athletes an opportunity to compete in mixed martial arts.
And so it's over at Ticketmaster. If you just type in NUCA, you can get tickets.
Yeah. Yes, most definitely.
All right. Well, I wish you the best with that. I'm looking forward to it. And thank you, as always, Owen, for coming on the show. What a great pleasure to talk to you about this big win. And congratulations, of course, to you and the team on what you guys did in there against Donald Cerrone. It was amazing to watch.
Thank you. Thank you. On to the next one, Ariel. Yeah.
That's right. That's right, Owen. We'll talk to you soon, Coach. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
All right. There he is. Rowdy Owen Roddy, striking coach for Conor McGregor. As he said, on to the next one. We shall find out who is next. We don't know yet. A lot of debate. lot of discussion, but as of right this moment, that is not locked in. So we'll see. Perhaps it is Gaethje, perhaps it's Nathan Diaz, perhaps it's Masvidal. It seems like those are the top three. And then we hope that Khabib and Ferguson remain intact for April 18th in Brooklyn, New York. For now, let us move along and say hello to our next guest. He returns to action on March 7th. How great is it to have Sean O'Malley back? Golly, I've been bothering his manager for quite some time, asking him for updates. When's he going to come back on? When can we talk to the man? Well, we know March 7th against Jose Quinones in Las Vegas. There he is, the Sugar Show. Is it back? Is it for real? Is it really happening, Sean? Are you really back 2 years later?
We'll see. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, this is the fourth time I've had a fight book. So we'll see. I'm excited, but I'm not getting my hopes up, so.
Is that a weird feeling? Because usually when you get a fight, you're probably excited, anxious, but are you not allowing yourself to fully invest yourself in the fight because of all the setbacks?
It's a super shitty feeling because you shouldn't have to feel like this going into a fight. But I think about it. I do my best to not think about it, but it comes every single day I think about it. I was actually driving home right now because you saw it just called. They're at my house, but...
Oh.
I had to pull over so I could do this interview.
Oh my gosh. Are they going to get mad at you for being late?
I don't know. Probably.
I mean, we won't keep you very long.
I'm here. I think I'm live, so I'm not.
Yes. Okay. So it's a bit of a complex situation as best as you can. Are you able to explain to us what is going on here with you? Because they did give you the retroactive suspension. You are clear, but you do have to, you know, continue to take tests, and it's because of this Ostrin that keeps popping up and you can't be at a certain level because of the pulse. It's a little confusing to the casual fan. So what could you tell us about the state of what you're dealing with right now?
It's confusing to me too. The levels Nate popped for when he got popped that time were higher than both the ones that I tested for when I got pulled off both my fight cards. So when I first got scheduled to fight Jose, I tested for, I don't know, 20 picograms or whatever, but I tested lower than Nate when he tested, got pulled off the card, got that all figured out, got booked against Cheeto, boom, tested again lower than he got tested for. So I got pulled off those two fight cards, and then that whole Nate thing blew up. So now they changed it to under 100 picograms. So now if I just had to test negative or under 100 picograms, I guess that's what's considered performance enhancing. So if you test for 101 picograms, it's considered performance enhancing. If it's under, it's not. So I think they don't even understand. They have the scientist that created Ostrin. He doesn't understand what's going on, like with my levels. So it's just like, I don't know. None of it makes sense. So it's like, they're like, oh, don't worry, you're going to be able to fight March 7th. It's like, well, it's kind of hard to worry because we tested everything I've taken and nothing came back. So it's like, it's super frustrating. I'm just honestly going day by day and just, I don't have a problem training like I'm in fight camp. So I'm just going to train like I fight March 7th and can't be surprised if they say anything because how it's been going.
So as of right now, you still don't know how this got in your system. You don't know if it was a tainted supplement or anything like that.
Well, I messaged because there's obviously, you know, there's a ton of athletes, not just in the UFC, that have been testing for Ostrin. I've messaged them. I said, hey, do you guys ever figure out where it came from? Not one of them has said yes. So I don't know. I don't know if it can be in meat. Again, they told me they reached out to a bunch of different scientists and not any of them have any idea or understanding of what's going on. So I think it's just a shitty situation.
Every time you take one of these tests now, are you freaking out? Are you nervous? Because you don't know when it's going to come back, you know, how it's going to come back, what it's going to say, what your levels are going to be, all that stuff.
Yeah, I had four I'll test negative, negative, random, 30 picograms, negative, four in a row negatives, random picograms. So, yeah, every time I get tested, like I'm getting tested today and I'm like, fuck, I could be getting pulled. I have two tests I'm waiting on. They told me I'm going to be. Now that last year I was the most tested fighter in the whole roster, and then now they said they're just going to start testing me again regularly or normally, just like everyone else. But I think this is the third time in 3 weeks that I've been tested. So yeah, every time they're there, it's like, great, this could be it. This could be it. So I have two tests I'm waiting on right now that I'm like, cool, we'll see.
And why? Because initially, weren't you supposed to fight in Texas on the Houston card, and then they moved it to the Vegas card? Why is that?
Yeah. They said that the Texas commission will not go off of the USADA ruling. And so if you test for even under 100 picograms in Texas, they'll still suspend you because they won't go off of USADA. And Vegas said, we'll listen to USADA and go off of the science that they have. So they just decided to switch it to Vegas.
Can you say unequivocally that you have never taken any kind of performance-enhancing drug knowingly? Like, you've never taken steroids, you never tried to cheat. This is something that you had no idea about, like, because obviously this is what is being, you know, labeled on you, right?
Yeah, I'm 25 years old. I'm an animal. I'm 25 years old. I eat good. I sleep good. I recover good. I do everything right. I don't need to take anything. I'm 25 years old. Why would I be taking anything? I fucking wake up with a boner, ready to fucking kill the day. I'm ready to go always. Like, I don't need to take nothing.
When you see people call you a cheater, does it drive you nuts, or have you just sort of ignored all of that? Do you not read social media and things like that anymore?
It doesn't really, no, just because what their perspective of me is doesn't change anything. Like, I just love to train, fight. I love this lifestyle that I live. So when I see some random people call me, it honestly doesn't bug me anymore. It used to, but it's been like 2 years. So now if I let it keep bugging me, I'm not doing something right. So yeah, no, it doesn't bother me anymore now.
Mentally, though, how are you handling all of this? Mentally, emotionally, 2 years you haven't fought. You are on such a high trajectory. Not to say that that's, you know, not going to fulfill itself, but 2 years is a long time to not compete. How are you dealing with this? And also, like, getting the fights, having them taken away, getting mentally up for a fight, and then crashing down. How do you deal with all of this?
If I didn't grow so much and get so good in the last 2 years, I would probably look at it and go and find a way to bitch about it or complain about it. But honestly, like, I have nothing to complain about, because how good I've gotten in the last 2 years has been an insane jump from where I was at to where I'm at right now. Like, if I would have fought Jose 2 years ago, I would have still beat his ass. Now I feel like I'm on a whole nother level. Like, I don't want to sit here and talk about, oh, I'm fighting March 7th, because I've talked about I was fighting Jose. I talked about I was fighting Marlon. And then it never happened. So I feel stupid sitting here telling you guys I'm going to fight when I keep saying I'm going to fight and nothing happens. So I don't know. You guys will get to find out where I'm at mentally, where I'm at physically, and where my skill level's at if I get a fight. You guys will get to see. And I live this lifestyle. I've lived it for the last 9 years. I train, and I wake up, and the next day, and I go train again. And so I don't – Friday night, Saturday night, I don't go out. Not a – I don't know. You can't live. You can't be in this game. You can be in the game 100% and still get hurt. So it's like, I'm not going to try to be in this game like 80%. 90%, like, I'm in this 100% ready to become world champ. That's where my mindset's been at the last, not just last 2 years, but the last, ever since I started this. So nothing's really changed other than I haven't been able to fight. I've still been training like I'm world champ. So.
At any point in the midst of all of this frustration, did you consider walking away?
At the very beginning, the first time, I'm like, what the? That doesn't make any sense. Oh, okay, it had to have been a crazy mistake. I'll be able to fight again right away. Like, I figured it was just going to be something like a tainted supplement, and then I quit taking it, and then I fucking can fight. Then the second time happened again. Then I remember the first couple days, I was like, what the fuck? There's no way this can happen right now. Like, what's going on? So the first couple of days I was pretty upset. But then I got my mind right, got my mindset back, and I'm going to be world champ.
And as far as like making a living, how has that been for you? 2 years, no fighting. How have you been able to support yourself?
I made that last fight. I made $100,000, and I've been fine. My lifestyle is not, I don't do nothing crazy. And then like Sanibel, they stuck with me. So shout out to them. I know Pure Kana stuck with me too. So those two sponsors really helped a lot. Some company, you know, some people dump me. They're like, all right, whatever, dude, you're not fighting anymore. I get that too, but I don't know. I've been fine.
an amazing story came out recently where I believe you placed eighth in a Fortnite tournament and you donated all of your winnings. I think the exact amount, correct me if I'm wrong, $27,500 you donated to the Raising Special Kids Foundation, a nonprofit organization in Arizona that helps systems of care to improve the lives of children with disabilities. Is that true? Did you really do that?
Yeah, it was a charity event. So yeah, the winnings went, we got to pick the charity it went to.
Okay.
But yeah, that was super fun. There was a Fortnite, it was in New York in a huge stadium. That was insane, but yeah.
Eighth, what would have first place gotten you?
I think 500,000.
Dang. That's a lot.
Yeah, they have a lot of money.
Yeah. Well done. Eighth, I mean, that's not bad. And so now, as far as what you have to do, other than these random tests, is there anything else that they're requiring you to do before this fight on the 7th?
No. Back in, I think, October last year, they had me take zero supplements. All the supplements I was taking, or I'm taking right now, too, is the NSF, the thorn supplements. But they told me in October, for 30 days, don't take any supplements and write down everything you're taking a food log. I still tested for 20, 30 picograms, taking zero supplements, writing down everything I was taking, sent it in, and then they're like, fuck, we're still lost. But yeah, I'm doing everything they're telling me to do, and only taking Thorn NSF certified supplement.
Do you know how many tests you have to take between now and then, or it's just you have to be available whenever they want?
Just random, whenever they want.
Okay. And but what are we doing with the hair here? Is it a little longer than usual? What's going on?
I just got done training. It's just crazy. I just wake up.
It's good. It's good. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it, my man. And hopefully we'll see you back in there. We miss you out there. All right. I feel bad that this guy's waiting for you. I don't want to be blamed for a missed test or anything like that. So, God bless. Get over there. Do your thing. And, hopefully it all works out and we can see you back in there March 7th. I don't know if you know this, but we had like a little kind of a poll thing that we did over on ESPN.com recently, and you came in second as far as the top 25 under 25 fighters, as far as ages, of course, in the sports. So you came in second, and we are looking forward to you, continuing to build on that.
I saw that. I also saw Macy Barber talking a little shit about me.
Oh, what'd she say?
I think she was talking to you. Man, I don't deserve to be on there.
Uh-oh.
It looked like she don't know jiu-jitsu, so.
Oh.
I know jiu-jitsu, so I think, I guess I don't have to talk shit. She got beat up.
Yeah. You think you should have been number one?
Not necessarily. Just, I mean, yeah, I probably should have been, yeah.
Right. All right.
We'll see. I'm just excited for you guys to go out there. To go out there and you guys get to judge me after my next performance on where you guys think I'm at. I think I'm a top 5 fighter in the world right now. I believe my skill level is extremely high and, my mindset and everything. I'm gonna go out there and prove it.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Sean. All the best. Great to talk to you again. There he is, Sean O'Malley, Sugar Show. Hopefully, we get to see it again on March 7th in Las Vegas. That's UFC 248, 247, of course, is the next one in Houston. That one headlined by Johnny Bones Jones against Dominic Reyes. Co-main event, Valentina Shevchenko against Caitlin Chookagian. Way back when, Jessica Penne fought for the UFC strawweight title against then champion Joanna Jacek, who fights for the belt in March. She's a former Invicta champion as well. Recently, as I said earlier in the show, she posted a heartfelt and lengthy statement on her social media about her situation with USADA. It's a complex one as well, probably even more complex than Sean O'Malley's. We appreciate her coming on the show to update us and tell us where she's at. She's also being joined today on the show by her longtime manager, Brian Butler. First off, Jessica, and there's Brian joining us as well. Guys, thank you very much for joining us. Jessica in particular, thank you for the time.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate you.
Thank you. And thank you, Brian, as well. We appreciate you being here. So Jessica, let me ask you, since you posted that statement, and we'll get into the nitty gritty of it all in a second, but, is there any kind of update to provide? Has anything changed since the last time we heard from you? I think around 10 or so days ago.
No, there's been no update. We're trying to move forward and, just retain a lawyer. But there's been no, update. But I will say that the support from the fans has been really amazing, and I just want to say thank you, and I really appreciate everyone's kind words and outreaches.
For those that may have missed it, and I know it's a lengthy story, and it probably hurts you to retell it, but could you tell us what you're going through? What is the story? What is the situation?
Well, I am basically looking at retirement because of a second offense. Years ago, I was suspended by USADA. It was a new program, and I wrote down a supplement that was on the ban list. I had been working with the UFC and USADA very closely, trying to get TUEs and figure out how to help my situation within the rules. And they wouldn't approve anything, so with a doctor's advice, I took an over-the-counter supplement. I claimed it on my form, and they informed me that that was in violation. I never tested positive for it, but because I wrote it down, I was suspended. I got a lawyer who, you know, tried to help me. He got it reduced from 2 years to 18 months. I didn't think that that was right, but again, I didn't know what I didn't know. So I took it, and I took the suspension, and I came back. And now I am... I recently was pulled from a fight last April because of a very small amount, a picogram amount of a banned substance. And I've been working very hard to prove that it was not intentionally taken. But because this is technically my second offense, I'm looking at a 4-year suspension. And without a lawyer's help, I don't see this getting cleared easily. The UFC... Donna and Jeff have been working very closely with me and really supporting me in this. And just everything that we try to do is being stopped by USADA, unfortunately.
And the second offense, that banned substance, does it have anything to do with the first offense?
No. It's a completely different substance. I have really no idea. I hadn't even heard of the substance. I didn't know exactly what it was, but it is on the ban list, and because of that, I'm looking at facing charges.
Do you know what it's called?
Ariel, can I say something?
Sure. Go ahead.
So it was a second offense, but when I say offense, I'm saying the first one I don't even really consider an offense because she wrote it down and she was trying to comply with USADA by getting her prescriptions checked and see if they would approve them, and they disapproved and so on and so forth. That aside, the second one is everything became so muddy in this situation that there's so much confusion as to, you know, we had to gather samples from other stores, other locations, and trying to find the same SKU number of all these things. And everything that you test in USADA, every test is $1,000 or more. So if you don't know where anything's coming from, you're basically shooting, you know, for a needle in a haystack, trying to come up with thousands of dollars to test all of these things. And some of them, you know, you're not even sure if it has the same possible contaminant in it, you know? And it was, like I said, she went and she got tested. We found one product that actually tested positive for stenozanol, which was what was found. It came back positive, and USADA decided that that test wasn't going to be thorough enough. So they went ahead, and that's when we had to gather samples from all over the place and retest everything again. And USADA's tests came back negative for it, you know, but the company that tested the product that came back positive is standing by their results. And like I said, we've had absolute support from Jeff Nowinski and Donna Marcolini at the UFC. They all believe in her innocence. And again, when to me, it sounds so ridiculous that they're testing down to a point where one test is positive and another one, and it's picogram level. So everybody understands already that this is not a dosage usage of whatever was found in her. So again, to end someone's career over it, I feel is a little much. And for her, they're saying that we're having a hard time going back and appealing the first case because she signed that sanction. She agreed to that sanction. She agreed to that sanction because she owns up to the responsibility that she should have been more thorough on taking what she took and writing it down. But obviously she wasn't hiding anything because she didn't
test positive for anything. They caught her because she wrote it on a form that she was taking this over-the-counter product. So, again, this whole thing I think is just getting blown out to a point that I just want some rational thought put into this to let her continue and finish her career.
Understand. I was wondering, do you know what, Jessica, do you know the name of the substance, the second one?
The stemsonol?
That's the second one.
Yes.
Yeah.
And but you don't have any idea where it came from, right? At this point, you don't know if it was a particular substance. You haven't figured that out. Is that accurate?
We have given them all of the testing, and a laboratory said that they found a trace amount of it. But USADA is not accepting that at this time.
Why?
Because they say that the test isn't thorough enough.
So can you retest it, or like what, or can they test it? Like, what does that mean, not thorough enough?
So they said that they're basically, what they're saying is that their lab has superior testing.
Okay.
So that they're not accepting Corva Labs results, even though Corva Labs stands by their results and what they found.
Okay. After you came out with your statement, USADA came out with a statement and said, given Jessica Penne's public statement, we can confirm her positive test for stenozolol. However, there are many factual inaccuracies and unfounded allegations in her statement, including that she has been forced out of the UFC. In fact, she has exercised her right to contest her case before an independent arbiter per a request USADA received after she released her public statement. So, Jessica, are you going to contest this? Are you taking this to an arbitrator to contest the suspension, the 4-year suspension?
That is my hope. Unfortunately, it's an extremely costly retainer fee. And so that's why we started a GoFundMe account to try and, within the time frame that USADA has given me, to raise that money, to try and raise money so that I can fight it. My first offense, I didn't know any better, and I didn't stand up for myself. I didn't know what to do, really. It was all very new to me. So at this time, I'm choosing to try and stand up for myself.
How much would something like this cost, Brian? Do you have any idea to actually go to arbitration?
Actually, go to arbitration could be anywhere from 20 to 40,000. So we're hoping that it would be, you know, somewhere in between that.
Okay, and this all has to come out of her pocket?
Yes.
Okay. And do you know when that would be? Like, how soon is there like a timeline or a cutoff point? You have to do this by March or April or something like that.
We have to file for the arbitration. They've given us an extension now, so that we can. A 2-week extension. They've given us that so that we can try to gather the funds together to do this. So we're also a arbitration fee waived, filing fee waived, so that, we're just trying to save as much.
And Jessica, you mentioned that the
financial situation.
You mentioned that the UFC has stood behind you, Jeff Nowitzki, Donna Marcolini. Is it possible that they could pay for this, since they seem to believe that you are innocent?
I don't know that that's an option. Donna and Jeff have spent countless hours trying to support me and look at every single angle that they can to help me. And what's happening is USADA is basically just saying, no, it's up to them. It's basically up to USADA's discretion. So I don't know that that's an option, honestly.
Okay. It's a little similar to the Sean O'Malley case. We just spoke to him right before you. They're always very complex, and we have heard from people over the years about these types of things with the picograms. MMA fans have had to learn about this stuff and try to become doctors. But can you tell us unequivocally you have never tried to cheat? You have never knowingly taken a steroid or a PED or anything like that?
Oh, absolutely not. And that's what's so heartbreaking, is my career is potentially, well, has been put on hold. My prime competitive years, I feel like I haven't been able to compete, and now facing retirement for something that I didn't do. It's heartbreaking. It's been absolutely heartbreaking, and I've tried to really find the positive in the situation and turn into a positive and do other things. But I love this sport. I've given my everything to this sport, and to not be able to do what I love just it's heartbreaking. And I can't help it feel defeated in these moments about this. And if it's not, you know, it's not just me, this can happen to everyone. And that's why I feel so compelled to stand up and just start a conversation about it, because this is just not right.
You mentioned that you
have. I also want to say, Ariel,
go ahead.
That you know, the USADA representative that is handling Jessica's case now was not there during her first offense. So we're in a situation now where I think the technicalities are there where they can throw the book at her, which is what they're trying to do. But there's also the technicalities are also there where they could also minimize this and not end her career, you know. And they're right. They're going to try to use our words like they're forcing her into retirement. No, they're not forcing her, but they know damn well that putting a 4-year sanction on her is retirement. So they're word playing a little bit here. And I think that, you know, after Jessica went through what she went through the first time and then coming up with the second offense, she's a bit of an emotional wreck over it. So when the new USADA representative is talking to Jessica, she's not able to grasp the big picture of why Jessica may be reacting like that. And granted, Jessica in her emotional state was probably a bit combative, you know, like, I didn't do this. Like, you're charging me with murder twice here and I haven't done anything. So I, you know, that probably didn't help our case. I'm actually sure of it. But at the same time, I also tried to, you know, personally, you know, kind of paint the picture for her to let her understand that. And, you know, it's been an ordeal trying to get that. But I don't think you throw the book at somebody just because, you know, they're having a bad day over trying to digest the fact that you potentially have the keys to ending or keeping her career. And that's kind of the situation that we're in. And we're just trying to make sure that, you know, if there is an opportunity technically to reduce whatever you can do, then do it. Don't throw the book at her for a. Everybody knows that's involved with it knows that this was not a cheating situation.
Jessica, you mentioned in your statement, you now have to drive Lyft to make money to be able to support yourself. Is that accurate?
I've been doing every single possible thing that I can do. Different odd jobs, teaching, trying to do seminars, private Lyft driving, you name it. Again, sticking with the positive in this time of not being able to compete, I've had a really awesome opportunity to get into broadcasting. CFFC has given me an opportunity to do commentary and analyst work, which I love. Like I said, I love this sport and I want to stick with it. It's given me so much and I want to get back to it and stay attached to it any way, shape, or form that I can.
Do you feel, Jessica, do you feel as though USADA isn't treating you fairly?
I mean, I feel that they don't have to do what they're doing. I feel that there are other possibilities of navigating through this. And that's how I feel.
Okay. And what are the next steps? And also, I'm curious, the GoFundMe, how much have you been able to generate through that?
Again, we've had amazing support in the first opening days of opening the GoFundMe account, and we've been able to raise close to $7,000, I think.
Okay. Wow. All right. So you're getting support. And if people want to contribute, where can they find that?
The GoFundMe link is actually in the bio of my Instagram and probably also Jessica's.
Okay. So Brian Butler or Jessica Penne. Brian, perhaps you know a little more, you know, a little more detail. What are the next steps? Like, what are you guys doing now? What are you looking at over the next couple of weeks, months?
We're just actually trying to gather the funds together to see if we can fight this all the way through for her. You know, USADA asked us to sign a letter agreeing to the sanction, and you know that's what Jessica did the first time, and we're in a position now of it's do or die, and there's no way we're going to sign a sanction that we know we're innocent from, so we refuse to sign it, and that just means we have to fight it. So some way somehow we've got to fight it. And again, Jessica and I have had some pretty long talks about this, and it's, you know, while she obviously the best case scenario is we want to get her, you know, get the sanction reduced to a point where she can get back in there and fight. But, you know, most importantly, we want to clear her name. You know, we don't want the perception out there that this is something that she is when she's not. So, you know, we're just in the process now of gathering the funds. We're talking to lawyers. And we have, you know, we have a deadline of about another week and a half to be able to raise and file this.
And last thing for you, Jessica, if in fact, worst case scenario, it ends up being a 4-year ban, do you think you'll be done? That you won't wait around and return after the 4 years are up?
I've had to, you know, be sidelined for a while. So I've just really surrendered to the idea of not fighting anymore. And as much as it breaks my heart, I have to be okay with it. And if, you know, that's what it's going to be, that's what it's going to be. And again, I love this sport, and I'll, you know, continue to participate in any way, shape, or form that I can.
Thank you for doing this, Jessica. I appreciate it very much. Thank you very much, Brian, as well, for providing further insight. I'm sorry that you guys are going through this, but obviously wish you the best, and hopefully for your sake, it ends up, you know, working out. Thank you, guys. Thank you,
thanks,
Jessica.
Harry.
Thank you, Brian. All the best to you. So there you go. Jessica Penne. We hear from Sean O'Malley and his situation. We hear from Jessica. We hear from Brian. Obviously not trying to, you know, place blame on anyone. I know these things are very complex, but I do think it's important to hear from the athletes who are being affected by this and hear their stories. And as I said, USADA did post a statement after her statement on January 10th. And so we shall see how this plays out and if she does, in fact, go to the arbitration process. And we have seen fighters go through that, and we have seen one or two successfully venture through that process. So we shall see the way it turns out for her if, in fact, she does go through that process. All right. In a moment, or do we have him? All right. In a moment, we're going to be joined by a proud member of the Nick Diaz Army, the one and only AJ Agazarm, a.k.a. Florida Boy, picked up his third pro win on Saturday. Nice submission win in the third round. What a fight this was on the Bellator prelims on Saturday night at the Forum. And now he is 3-1 as a professional, and he's kind enough to be joining us right now. One of the best fights on that card. There he is, our old pal AJ Agazarm, who once upon a time announced that he'd be coming over to Bellator on our program in another studio. AJ, how are you?
Hey, Ariel, how's it going?
It's going really well. Congratulations. Would you say, I know you're still in the embryonic stages of your mixed martial arts career, but would you say that was your best win to date?
Best win to date. It was the most exciting win.
Okay.
Yeah. It was interesting.
You don't agree with the best win to date statement?
Well, you know what? It was the best win, actually. You're right, because it ended in my patented move, so I was stoked about that.
Well, yes, I did call it a triangle choke. Did I make a mistake there? Should I have called it something else?
Yeah, it's not a triangle choke, and I don't know how it's supposed to how that works with the commissioner or anything like that. But it's not a triangle choke. It's I coined it as the Agazarm. It's a little bit different than a triangle. So,
can you explain the difference?
Choking out. Yeah, I'm using the heel of my foot to compress against his carotid artery so that cuts off the circulation to his head, as opposed to a traditional triangle when I shoot my legs through, and I'm using my legs to do it. I'm using my heel, and it sets up from an armbar. So you saw I started with the Kimura trap in the beginning because he decided that he was going to try to wrestle me, which was kind of cool. He took a shot after getting pieced up in the face a little bit on the feet, and then he took a shot, and then I trapped him with the Kimura, and then transitioned from the Kimura to the armbar, and then the armbar to the Agazarm is the actual name of that move. And so I don't know how the commission works or anything like that, but that's how it should read on like Wikipedia and things. It's not a triangle choke.
That would be nice if it said submission
Agazarm in brackets. And the he, by the way, is Adele Altamimi, who you defeated in that fight in the third round, 122 of the third round. It didn't start off particularly well for you. What were you thinking in the early goings of that fight, and how were you able to stay composed to turn it around?
Well, he's a very skilled striker, and I knew that going into that. Not only is he a skilled striker, but he's a skilled MMA fighter. He has 14 professional fights. So that was something that I was up against and had to kind of navigate through and figure my way out. Took a little bit more damage than I anticipated before I could get to my good stuff. But the most feared aspect in all of MMA is my strong suit. And I think it showed there. It showed there on Saturday.
What do you prefer, a fight like that where, you know, you say that you took a little more damage than you wanted, or your last fight, which I think you received a little bit of criticism for, saying that, you know, the fight wasn't all that exciting or whatnot. This one was exciting. They don't give out fight of the nights and all that stuff, but this one would be considered, I think, if Bellator did do that. Which kind of fight do you prefer?
Why do you think Bellator doesn't give fight of the night performances?
That's a good question. Maybe they want to not copy the UFC. It's not really their thing. Have you ever asked Scott Coker this?
I've never asked him, but I've always thought about it. I'm like, well, to incentivize the fighters in the promotion or for the fight card, it makes sense. You know, that's something that if I knew that there was a price tag for, even if they don't want to go as extreme as saying, you know, matching the UFC's $50,000, there should be some sort of incentive for fighters to say, you know, hey, who out of all the fighters on this card, whoever has the most exciting performance or whoever has the most stellar submission or, you know, just like they do with the other promotions, is going to get incentivized to do that. And I know that we're already incentivized to win, but you want to stand out from the other guys on the card. And I'm always looking at those guys on any card that I'm at, whether it's a jiu-jitsu match or a fight. I want to make sure that I'm outperforming everyone else on that card. And I think it would be nice to be incentivized for that.
Another fighter who's a proud member of the Nick Diaz army is Chris Avila, who also fought on that card and lost a controversial decision a couple fights before yours. Did you feel pressure to kind of get the team back on track after that decision? Did you feel like you had to get a W after he was, you know, arguably robbed of one?
Yeah, I couldn't believe how much I was able to watch a little bit. The TV kept shorting in and out of our locker room, so I popped over to the other room real quick and watched it. But when I watched, all I saw was the dude running away. And then next thing I know, the other dude, he's getting his hand raised. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. From what I saw, Chris was, he had him in submission attempt after submission attempt, was hitting him up, was kicking him. And it was really, it was surprising to see that. But as far as it distracting me, you know, we're in this together. So it didn't really have that effect. I think it was just, okay, well, he's done now. I'm going to be up in a couple more. I think that's the most difficult thing that you deal with when you're fighting with teammates on a card, is to know, okay, the coaching staff is going to attend to them for a moment, and then they're going to come back. And how long do we have in between that? Sometimes the fights are going quick, so you don't know if this guy's going to get a submission, or he's going to get the knockout, or if it's going to go all 15 minutes. So time management is something you really have to work on as a fighter. Fortunately, I've been able to do that in jiu-jitsu for so many years. Now it's just reapplying it to the world of MMA. And with something as high stakes as possibly getting knocked out, yeah, there's some pressure there. There is some, you know, anxiety that you can easily get faced with. Fortunately, I have the, you know, the staff that we have. Is Nate was backstage, Ernie Reyes Jr., Richard Perez, and Randy Spence, and it's difficult to feel sort of, you know, you're in their presence, and it just kind of spills over.
So now three straight wins in Bellator after the disappointing debut. Do you want to take a step up? Do you feel like you've earned a step up in competition? Do you want to be considered among, you know, some of their rising stars at 145? Do you want a big name opponent? What do you want next, AJ?
I never was really known for shying away from a challenge. I want to fight the best guys, and I don't think that I need to you know, pay my dues, so to speak, in order to do that. I'm a world champion in the most coveted aspect of the game. And it's the most feared aspect of the game. And unlike striking, where, you know, you see a big difference significantly in my approach to striking, but this year versus my last fight. And I think that given that, I'm right up there with Eric to take on the best guys. And I want to fight the best guys. I want to be a world champion in Bellator. So I don't think that there's any reason that I shouldn't be fighting the best guys right now. I don't know who Bellator wants to protect or who they want to, you know, who doesn't. People say that they want it, but they don't really want it. Like, look at Gallagher. I was willing to step in on the 2-day notice to face him because they're pumping him up and making him seem like he's a world beater. Well, if you think he's world championship caliber, let me submit him.
That would be fun. I mean, not the submission part, but the actual fight.
Yeah, I, like I said, I think my aspect of the game is the most feared because it takes the longest to obtain. It's a skill set that it's really difficult to kind of find its way. If you look at my opponent, he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, and he went for a submission attempt on me with an armbar. But little did he know, I actually gave him that armbar so that I could end up on top. And then when I got to my submission, it was game over. So there's a different caliber there. And I think that, you know, I don't think that I have just the best grappling, the best jiu-jitsu in my division. I think I have the best grappling jiu-jitsu in the entire league. And I deserve to be fighting the best guys with that skill set because it's nobody knows what to do with it. I'm still, you know, of course I'm still navigating through the striking, and I'm fortunate to be up with the 209 guys and up in Stockton at the Nick Diaz Academy to learn that. But that's just a matter of time before I start to make it more fluid. And with the coaching staff that we have, it's inevitable. I want to continue to test myself. But somebody made a comment about facing one of the dudes that called me out. And I'm like, how did he win? He wanted to be a triangle. I'm like, well, I'm not trying to impress. If I wanted to just go against other grapplers or go against other jiu-jitsu guys, I would just stick with jiu-jitsu. I want to challenge myself against the best guys. I want to challenge myself against the best strikers. And, you know, this guy was, he had 14 fights. He had, you know, he had been in Bellator before, and he's a black belt in Taekwondo. So he posed a serious threat. And I think that was what was part of the reason that made it so exciting, because I had to kind of navigate through it and get to my own strong suit, which was the jiu-jitsu. And I put my own spin on it, which was cool.
It's a great fight.
Your whole career to get to that.
Yeah, it's a great fight. If anyone missed it on the prelims Saturday, I suggest checking it out. You mentioned those famous brothers from Stockton, California. The last time I actually saw you and spoke to you at length was in New York prior to the Nick Diaz interview that we conducted right after UFC 244. Could you give us an update on where we're at with Nick? We haven't heard much, you know, as far as his status since that interview. And I know you kind of serve as maybe a consultant or a manager for him. Is he going to fight in 2020?
I know Nick right now is focused on the business side of things, and that's been a major focus for him. So he's dealing with everything that comes with that, and he's also, you know, he just had two guys that fought on the Bellator card. That was a big, you know, that was a big step, and it was in the beginning of the year. So we're all going to regroup and get back and look at what we're going to do going forward. All I know is that 2020 is going to be a big year for the Nick Diaz army. And it's tough because, you know, these guys, they say like, oh, I want to fight so-and-so. I want to fight so-and-so. I'm like, well, you certainly don't want to fight anyone from our team, because when you're fighting one person from our team, we bring a whole entire army. And that's what you saw at the Bellator. Like we mobbed in there with like 15, 20 guys. And, when you take on one of us, you don't just take on one, you take on all of us. And, That's the best part. And I think Nick really represents that, and he knows how to cultivate it and bring everybody together. And Nate as well. They're the OGs of the OGs.
Have there been serious talks with the UFC about his return since the interview, since those comments?
You'd have to ask Nick. I know that, you know, they were trying to do that Masvidal fight. It really would be up to, you'd have to ask him.
Okay.
I think from a fan's perspective, from just an outsider looking in, if I'm unbiased, what I want to see, I would want to see Masvidal against one of the Diaz brothers. In the forefront of my head, I'm just like, Nate kind of got jibbed on that call to end the fight. So there's talks about Conor fighting him, and I'm like, why? He already beat him up twice, and Conor really doesn't want that fight. Nate's an endurance type athlete, just like myself. Like, you see my last fight against this guy, he came out really strong in the first and in the beginning half of the second, but the test of the fight was when he started to get pieced up, his conditioning started to diminish, and my triathlon numbers, my endurance level, my stamina level that conditioned over time, just like the Diaz brothers. We have the same triathlon coach, you know, Damian Gonzalez of Cranked Energy. He brings us to a completely different stratosphere in terms of operating at a high endurance. And these guys can't keep up. That's why you saw the guy in my last fight fold. He couldn't hold it together. I made him shoot a takedown on me with my boxing, and everybody wanted to critique my boxing and say, oh, AJ's a garbage striker, he'll never have boxing. Well, that boxing just saved me in a fight, and that came from Richard Perez. It's like, it's world class. There's no denying that. And when you look at a fight between Masvidal and Nate, it's just like, yeah, Masvidal may be able to do a little bit of damage in the beginning, but Nate is an endurance athlete. He's stamina driven, and Nick as well. The whole camp is, and it's just like, you can't have a BMF title and freeze it because the doctor stops it and says, oh, you know, we can't go anymore, when Nate was willing, ready, and able to continue. So I think that just that aspect alone makes me want to see that fight again. But him against any of the Diaz brothers for the BMF title would be dope.
True or false? Nick Diaz fights in 2020.
True or false? That's not a true or false question.
What do you mean? I'm asking you.
You can't ask that.
Why? Why is that not a true or false question? That's like the definition of a true or false question.
That's asking me to predict the future, right?
Yeah, I mean,
for somebody else.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. Nick's gonna fight when Nick wants to fight, and right now he's focused on business. He's focused on building up the Nick Diaz army. We just had two off the bat at the beginning of the year, and we're coming strong for 2020. He's an OG. He's a special dude.
Indeed.
I think he knows the fight game. He knows the fight game better than anybody. He knows when to strike. And you know, there was a part where he was really interested in that Masvidal fight, to come in and kind of take, you know, get it under wraps. But Nathan's training, and Nathan's getting ready himself. So, like, either one of them can step in. I think Masvidal just needs to worry about being ready himself. He's too busy running around and messing around with Jake Paul right now. He's trying to help Jake Paul do a boxing fight or an MMA fight with homeboy. And I think that's ridiculous.
All right. Well, we shall leave it at that. AJ, congratulations, my man. Great victory, great fight. It was entertaining.
I do have news for you.
Oh, well, yeah. We have 30 seconds because Michael Chiesa is standing by. What do you got?
Bellator just signed, just offered me four more fights.
Oh. So
they signed me on. Yeah.
Well done. Congratulations. Mazel tov.
Yeah.
New four-fight deal for the Florida boy. Well done, my man.
Four-fight deal's coming. It's going to be big in 2020, and we're coming strong.
All right. I look forward to it. Thank you very much. Congrats on the win.
All right.
All right. There he is. AJ Agazarm. Now 3-1. Just got a new four-fight deal. That's what happens. You come on this show, you get a new contract. It's kind of in the small print at the very, very bottom when I text you. It just sort of pops up. Anyway, let's finish on this note. He had arguably one of the best performances of the entire weekend. What a win for this man, Michael Chiesa, ever since he dropped down to 170. He's been a completely different guy. And you want to talk about a true mensch? This man, after being in Raleigh, North Carolina, flew to Dubai to corner one of his friends, Austin Arnett, who is fighting this coming weekend. And there he is, fresh off the plane in Dubai, joining us with a little cup of perhaps coffee, perhaps tea. No one knows. No one will ever know. Wearing a robe. Look at him, smiling. Michael, how are you?
Really good, man. How are you, Ariel?
Are you, in fact, in Dubai right now?
I'm in Abu Dhabi. We flew into Dubai, and we just got to our hotel a couple hours ago.
Wow, amazing. I appreciate you doing this, because I think it's around 12:50 a.m. over there. So thank you very much for doing this, my man. And you seem happy. You seem like you're glowing. You're content. Would you say that was one of, if not, I mean, you've had some great moments, Ultimate Fighter stuff. One of your best performances ever in the UFC, considering the opponent as well?
Yeah, 100%. You know, the caliber of opponent and just what it took for me to actually get into that fight. You know, I kept this one kind of close to my chest, but I broke my nose 6 weeks before the fight. And I actually have videos and like pictures of the x-ray and all that hoopla. So I broke my nose 6 weeks before the fight. And with the type of opportunity that was ahead of me, I just did not want to pull out of the fight. And to go into a fight against a guy like Rafael Dos Anjos with a broken nose was a little intimidating. So it was a very trying camp. It was really stressful, and just really happy things went my way.
How did you break your nose?
I was just a collision at practice, you know what I mean? I was over on the west side training at Chase Hooper's gym, combat sport and fitness in Enumclaw. And I was going with one of his training partners, Ian Williams, and I just was trying to set up a crash to get into a clinch, and Ian ducked his head to throw a left hand, and I just ran my face right into the top of his head. And it was like the first round of sparring. I felt my nose break, drop, spit out a bunch of blood, got up, finished the round, and then finished my rounds. And then when I went and looked in the mirror, my nose was just ballooned up, and sure enough, I had two fractures in my face.
Wow. And so what did you do the rest of camp?
Well, this is where my head coach, Rick Little, really shined. You know, I could only run and hit mitt so much. And so we just did a lot of modified technical training sessions that were really long and were able to keep me stimulated and really focus on the game plan and stuff. So he really shined as a coach to keep my head in the fight. You know what I mean? I hit mitts and did some running and my strength conditioning for a few days. And I really started to kind of fall off a little bit. And really the doubt started to creep into my mind. Like, I'm like, dude, I'm going against Rafael Dos Anjos. He's going to throw that big overhand left right in my face, and my nose is going to be on the other side, on my cheek. You know what I mean? I started thinking all these crazy things, and so Rick did a really good job modifying these practices for 6 weeks to keep me stimulated. And I actually only sparred full contact 2 times in camp, and
wow,
still went good. So I'm happy. I'm very, very lucky that my nose isn't on this side of my face today. So, but he definitely rebroke it in the second round of the fight. So.
Oh my gosh. Well, I was going to ask you, how did it feel in the fight and how does it feel now?
It's pretty tender. You know, I sound pretty stuffy. I just can't really breathe too good. But it wasn't really like a big punch. It was when I was underneath him, in the second round, kind of in on a single leg, and he just kind of threw a short punch and it hit me on the side of the nose. And I just, it's something about when you break your nose, the noise that you feel, you hear, it's like weird crunching noise you can hear between your ears.
Oh my.
I felt and heard that noise again and was like, oh yep, he did it. He rebroke my nose. So yeah, it's all good. It's the fight game, man, so I'll take it.
Do you think you'll need surgery?
No, it's not displaced. It's not like what happened was is when I actually broke it, I got hit on one side of my face with such a hard impact that it fractured on the other side of my nose.
Oh.
So it's not like my nose went boom and like got displaced off to the side. I just have like a fracture, like right on the side of it, and then one on the tip. So yeah, I'll text you the x-ray if you want.
Okay. Wow. That is wild. And by the way, did you consider pulling out, maybe rescheduling the fight?
Well, I don't think really rescheduling the fight was an option. So in this sport, man, you really got to take chances. And that's just a fact that sometimes some of those chances you take involve your health and going into fights with ailments and stuff. So I definitely considered pulling out, but, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you got to think about this, man. This is an opportunity to fight the number 5 ranked guy in the world, and I'm not ranked at all. I got to take a chance with that fight. You know what I mean? It was a risk I was willing to take And, you know, obviously it paid off. So I'm really happy that I went through the fight.
Were you mad you didn't submit him early on? It looked like you were about to.
Yeah, I was a little bit bummed, man. He's freaking strong. He's a really strong guy. He really filled out a lot after weigh-ins. Like, I remember seeing him get in the octagon, and I was like, wow, he's a lot bigger than I thought he would be. And he's really strong. And I remember grabbing in the third round when I grabbed his wrist, it felt like I was grabbing a log. Like, it's like usually I got pretty decent sized hands, and I grabbed his wrist and I could barely get my fingers around. You know what I mean? So he's a big, strong guy. I always want the finish, and I think that would have really been a feather in my cap if I could submit him. You know what I mean? I really like, that's my game. I'm a grappler first, and so I don't feel like I have fully succeeded in a fight unless I've really submitted a guy or really displayed my ground skills. And I didn't get the full display like I usually do. Like when I fought Diego, it was a 3-round fight, but I was, you know, I was all over him in these crazy positions and doing a lot of transitions and all these kind of cool things. And this fight, it was like, it wasn't that easy. You know what I mean? So it's a testament to how good he is, and it's also a testament to how much more I need.
So the performance was phenomenal, but then afterwards you get on the mic and you drop the mic. You know exactly what you want. You call your shot, and then you walk off. Those are very fun. I love those. And you called out Colby Covington in July. Why him?
Well, Ariel, to get anywhere in this sport, you got to face your fears to achieve your goals. And I want to fight the best guys. I want to fight the guys that keep me up at night. I'm not going to get anywhere I want to go in this sport by picking and choosing my fights and looking for the easy way up. And, you know, when you beat the guy that's ranked number 5, I'm only looking at the guys ahead of him. I'm not looking at the guys below him. I'm looking at 4-3-2-1 and champion. You know what I mean? So I look at the availability and the styles, and, you know, I'm not going to go get in a verbal pissing match with the guy. That's for sure. Cause he shut me out. I'm not good at the trash talking stuff. I've shown that. But I think the guy's a phenomenal fighter. And I think it would be a big test for me, because not only would he test me physically as a fighter, but mentally, he's going to put me through the ringer, dude. He does that to all the guys he fights. Really have to go through that mental warfare, whether they engage in the trash talk or not. You got to be ready to take some verbal barbs from him. So I want to test myself. You know what I mean? And I think that's the ultimate test. It's Colby Covington. So, you know, why not fight him? You know, I'm not going to go ask for a guy I think I can beat. I'm going to go ask for a guy I think is stiffest test, you know.
Any idea if he wants it?
The job.
Does he want it? Do you know?
No idea.
Any response? Okay.
No idea. I know Uncle Chael likes to fight.
Yeah, well.
I'm hoping maybe Uncle Chael can, you know, middleman this thing, because he's in between him and I, you know what I mean? So, you know, maybe next time you see Chael at the ESPN headquarters, you should put in a good word for him.
Or maybe we'll ask Colby himself and find out. Perhaps we'll get a chance to talk to him. Now, as I mentioned on Twitter, you are the ultimate pro, and you were the big favorite going into the Helwani Knows World Order Trivia Challenge in December. Oh. Unfortunately, one of the great upsets in the history of our time. You did not pull through, and of all people, Joanyan Jacek won the second edition of the NWO Trivia Challenge. But you know me. I did tweet about it, and you said that it still haunts you in your sleep. And I do believe, to some degree that you are being actually genuine, because you were very confident and you are a big fan and connoisseur. So Michael, I have some good news for you, my friend. I am going to give you right here and now a chance to redeem yourself. I have gotten 10 new questions for you. Now I feel bad, Michael. I feel bad for you, because you just got off the plane. It's 12:55 over there in Abu Dhabi, so I feel like you might be a little out of it. But them's the breaks, my man. Do you want 10 new questions? Do you want to rifle through these?
Yes, let's go.
Let's go. This is your chance to redeem. Now, can we just establish what would qualify as redemption? Would it be 10 out of 10? Would it be 8 out of 10? What would you be happy with here?
Ariel, your approval. That's what I'm looking for.
Okay,
I'm
here we go.
Your seal of approval. So whatever you feel is fair. Let's do it.
Okay, and I must say, I did not come up with the questions. These came from, once again, Andrew Davis of ESPN. Can I be honest?
I think they're a little
tough. Like, if we're grading these on, like, easy, middle, hard. I was surprised, but this man is ruthless. I'm just going to say. All right, here we go. At UFC 5 in Charlotte, North Carolina, of course, you fought in North Carolina, Royce Gracie and Ken Shamrock fought to a draw in the first ever UFC Super Fight Championship. How long did the fight officially last? You give me a ballpark here, because this is tough.
You're giving me a ballpark, or I'm.
I'll accept the ballpark.
45 minutes.
36. Okay, it's tough. It's tough. This is tough. Okay, here we go. Your fight, Michael, with Diego Sanchez was the 20th fight between Ultimate Fighter champions. What was the very first matchup in UFC history between Ultimate Fighter champions?
Bisping and Rashad.
Bang! Nailed it. UFC 78, Newark, New Jersey. All right, Michael, which event was the first under the Zuffa banner? First Zuffa event. What number was it? UFC what?
UFC... I want to say, and that was, it's going to be in the UFC 17 or 11. Is it 17?
30.
UFC 17?
30, unfortunately.
30. Oh, my God.
Okay, it's okay. It's okay.
Was it, Jens Pulver? Dude, the first one was Jens Pulver versus BJ.
Was it BJ Penn?
Lightweight title fight. It was a snoozer. It was BJ Penn and Jens Pulver. It was a snoozer. Yeah.
Anyway,
I remember the event.
UFC 30. That's all good. It's all good. Well, let's forget that one. What was the first ever UFC main event to take place in Houston? Of course, next pay-per-view is in Houston. First ever main event for the UFC in Houston, Texas. Very famous fight. Very famous moment in UFC history. First ever main event in Houston.
That was for the heavyweight championship, if I'm correct. And wasn't that Junior and Kane?
It was a Matt Serra GSP, UFC 69.
Oh, my goodness. I've known that one. That's my
shootout.
Favorite fighter.
Oh, come on. All right. Well, let's move on. Okay, Mike, you earned a UFC career high 6 takedowns against RDA. What is the record for most takedowns in a UFC fight and by whom?
Oh, well, see here, this is where it's Khabib. Okay. For one.
Nailed it.
By wrestling rules. A takedown is if you take a guy down and you control the position
right.
for a couple seconds. Now, Khabib took him down and never unclasped his hands, and Abel kept getting up, and he didn't get an escape. Khabib kept control of him. So us wrestling nerds, I don't know if you'd really classify that takedowns, but I think he got it was some astronomical number. It was like 16 takedowns or 20 takedowns or something crazy. I don't even call them takedowns. That's why I don't know the exact number, because
21
able cut and get away. He was 21. Yeah. See,
but you listen, that it doesn't matter. You got the opponent. That's a win. All right. Yeah. The UFC has visited Washington State, where you are proudly from 3 times, all of them in Seattle, of course. Name at least 3 of the 6 headliners for those events in Seattle. Can you name at least 3 of the 6 headliners? Yeah, just the fighters.
Ben Henderson,
yep.
And Nate Diaz.
Yep. Yep.
John Moraga, Demetrius Johnson.
Yep.
And then the next one was – that one was in – Rich Franklin, Chuck Liddell.
No, but you got 4, so we asked for 3. Rogério Nogueira and Phil Davis. Oh. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah, Rogério Nogueira and Phil Davis.
But that's fine. That's a win because you got 4. Which fighter has the most rear naked choke submissions in UFC history? You are tied for 3rd with 5. Who has the most?
Kenny Florian.
Damian Maia, 9.
Kenny Florian or Joe Lozon?
Damian Maia, 9.
What?
Damian Maia.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Kenny Florian, though.
Yeah, respect, Kenny. All right. How many Ultimate Fighter champions have won an undisputed UFC title? Not interim, undisputed. How many?
Forrest Griffin.
Yep.
Michael Bisping.
Yep.
Nico Montano.
Yep.
Let's see. Oh, Carlos Esparza.
Yep.
And, give me a second. Give me 1 second. I'm running it through my head. Oh, that would be UFC. Oh, Matt Serra.
Yep, that's 5. You mentioned another one. I'll give you a hint. 8. There's 8.
Oh, there's 8. Rashad Evans.
6.
And give me a second. I'm still thinking.
One current champ.
One current champ. That would be. Don't tell me. I don't want to know. I don't want to know from you. I don't want to know it from you. Is it a female?
No.
Yes.
No.
No, it's not. It's Cejudo. There's. Cejudo. There is who's the lightweight champion. Lightweight champions could be 170-pound champ is Kamaru Usman.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then one and more, then, 185.
185. That Israel Adesanya.
Robert Whittaker.
Robert Whittaker. Yeah, I thought you meant current champion.
Oh, jeez.
Threw me off. You said 185.
Which UFC fighter has won the most main events in UFC history? Who has won the most main events in UFC history?
Most UFC main events in
these are
UFC history. These are
you just mentioned his weight class. Oh my God. Andrew Davis, you are mean.
So this is okay. I should get a. Do I get a phone a friend here?
No.
Do I get a lifeline?
No.
Do I get a weight class at least?
Yes, 185. You just mentioned it.
Oh, so that's who's got the most.
Yeah,
the most,
I mean, now it's easy. Main event wins.
So it's Michael Bisping.
No, it's Anderson Silva. Come on. Okay, one last one. Of the 12 trilogies in UFC history, only two have seen one fighter win all three fights. Name them. There have been 12 trilogies. Only two has one fighter gone 3-0.
Oh, boy. Three trilogies. So that would be only one person has won all three trilogies?
Yeah. No. Of the 12 trilogy matchups in UFC history, one guy won all three fights. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes. So one guy won all three. God damn it. I feel like there's going to be a weird one in here.
You're going to kill yourself when you hear. I mean, I'm chalking this up to the jet lag.
Give me a second. Man, I could rattle
lightweight,
off two.
Lightweight and light heavyweight. Lightweight and light heavyweight.
Oh, light heavyweight. That would be
legends. Absolute legends. We just we just mentioned one of them. Legend. Tito Ortiz against.
Yeah, with Chuck Liddell.
Ken Shamrock and.
Oh, Ken Shamrock. Yeah.
BJ Penn.
I'm jet lagged.
BJ Penn versus Frankie Edgar. Okay, last one. Bonus question. If you get this, that means that you get everything right. Okay, bonus question. I didn't write this. He wrote this. How many times has Ariel Helwani won the MMA Journalist of the Year award? Consecutive. How many?
Oh, shit. Well,
for all the marbles.
For all the marbles. But here's the thing. How many years have we had the MMA Awards?
Listen, I can't answer that. I can't answer that.
Okay. I'm going to say you've won it 7 times.
Nine straight times, Michael. For God's sakes. All right. We will live to fight another day. I'm chalking this up to the jet lag. Michael, we're out of time. I love you. Great performance. Good luck to Austin on Saturday.
I'm crying, man. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Ariel, you're the man. Go, Nick. And
we'll talk soon.
Say, my condolences to Kobe Bryant and his family and all those affected. Much love to the Mamba.
Amen. Thank you very much, sure. Mike. Appreciate you doing this, especially so late. And that is the perfect way to end today's show. Much love to the Mamba and everyone affected by that horrible, horrible accident yesterday. And if you didn't see it, please do go find what Jay Williams said on SportsCenter yesterday, as real, as raw as you can possibly be on live television, even uttered an expletive and it didn't matter and no one cared. I'm happy that they didn't bleep it. Just in essence, try to live every day to its fullest. Try to live with love in your heart. Just try to be the best that you can be and try to, you know, outdo your potential. Anyway, much respect, much love to everyone. Black Mamba, man, what a legend. And it's been nice for the last, you know, 3 or so hours not fully thinking about that horrible tragedy, but now of course will immerse myself once again trying to read and watch as much as possible, because we lost an absolute icon, not just a sporting icon, a global icon. And it's just amazing to think that he is not going to be around, because it did really seem like this man was destined to do really great things post playing for for his kids, for his daughters, for his family, but for the world. Just seemed to be in such great spirits. And it's really a shame. It's an absolute shame that we're not going to see the man that he was destined to become. It's horrible. Anyway, we thank all of you for watching. We appreciate your time, as always. Thank you very much to all our guests. Thank you very much to everyone who has stopped by today. Unfortunately, I threw away all my papers, so now I don't remember all the guests. Do I have the guests here? Michael Chiesa, thank you very much to him. AJ Agazarm, Jessica Penne, Brian Butler, Sean O'Malley, Owen Roddy, Macy Barber, Chris Cyborg, Curtis Blades, Tyron Woodley, Daniel Cormier, thank you for the assists, Corporate Jake. I appreciate it very much. And thanks to all of you for watching and listening as always. Back next week, same time and place. Until then, I say peace. I'm out of here.
I don't really feel like fighting anyone else anymore. Where I fight, it's going to be for the championship, or I'm not going to fight. And the honorable thing to do would be to fight again and just put him into the trilogy.
I'm not going to lie, it's a bit annoying, frustrating, because I have a lot of respect for Stipe. We've trained together previously, but in order to be the champion has to fight.
He is a genius, Conor. You know, when it comes to being in that octagon, not many people are thinking of, you know, cracking people with their shoulder.
I'm 25 years old. I'm an animal. I'm 25 years old. I eat good. I sleep good. I recover good. I do everything right. I don't need to take anything.
It popped, and it was like, oh no, that's not good. And I knew that I had to fight through it. And so, you know, I just kept going. And when I stood up from the stool, I was like, this is really not good.
He was so graceful and so pleasant. Now all of a sudden he's taking on the lead of everybody else, and this division is getting so corny and it's starting to irk me so bad. And I just really need to come back and just try to everybody up.
If there's someone who's hurt, I mean, I would capitalize on that. You know, I would have stood her up and I would have been like, no, I'm going to kick your leg until you fall over.
Would it be fair to say you want to end your career with Bellator?
Yes, I want to end my career in Bellator.
It was like the first round of sparring. I felt my nose break, drop, spit out a bunch of blood, got up, finished the round, and then finished my rounds. And then when I went and looked in the mirror, my nose just ballooned up. And sure enough, I had two fractures in my face. Very lucky that my nose isn't on this side of my face today.